2010 after profiled containers were searched. And cargo, as far as cargo is concerned, 100% also done. That amounts to 8,635. The percentage of medium to high risk incidents stabilized in the relation to requests received. That relates to the National Intervention Unit, the Special Task Force and Public Order Policing. The target that we set as far as that is concerned, that 100% of all incidents that we are called to needs to be stabilized. With reference to the National Intervention Unit, a total of 2,204 incidents were stabilized in relation to requests received. That amounts to 100%. 260 incidents stabilized in terms of the Special Task Force, 100%. And then in terms of public order policing, a total of 14,693. That includes 3,715 unrest-related incidents and 10,978 peaceful incidents that were stabilized. That amount also amounted to 100%. The protection of cargo, members, the honourable members, the target was set at 100% to be provided for all requests that has been received, and there was 100% protection provided. The total number of 176 requests were received for protection, and we had no security breaches as far as that is concerned. I would say that concludes program two.
Thank you for that. Members, we will now go to questions with relation to the presentation that we received. The first from my side, and then I'll go, start with Honourable Kolobana towards Honourable Ramatlakane. Now, the next few questions, and that makes it very difficult if the acting accounting officer is not present, but I believe that General Kruse and your team, you will have then to stand in for that. Now, the Auditor General, as I indicated previously, I mean, the committee is very disappointed. I mean, it's the first time in more than 8 years that there is a qualified audit, so that's a major concern. Now, the AGS mentioned three issues to us. There's a slow response by management to address audit findings, a lack of stability in key positions, and of course not paying attention to key drivers of internal controls affecting leadership, financial and performance management, and governance. Now, if we can get a straight response on the qualification that you received in terms of the AG's report. The AG indicated, I mean, the department was informed early in the management letter, in the time ran out. Now, that relates to leadership and planning. If you were able, in the normal course of things, you should have been able to deal with it. Because we asked specifically the AG, was it in certain provinces? Was it at certain levels? And they indicated this morning it was across the organization. So we want to know what is the game plan to fix that, and who is leading that process? Because the dilemma is, if that process is not headed by the accounting officer, we're not going to find any solutions. We will later come to the repeat findings in program 2 and 3, because that in effect says that the top management who are here currently today, they're not dealing with those issues, and it's repeat findings. So on the first qualification, can we get an indication what is being done to address it? And in terms of the interactions also with the AG, was there interaction between the accounting officer and the AG on those early concerns that was raised? So if we can just get an indication with relation to that. Then in terms of the AG's further points that's being made, relate to visible policing, we will tomorrow deal with detective services. Again, the issue of station management, cluster management. What is being done from head office side, from your acting or from your deputy national commissioners, to ensure that those issues are addressed? The repeat findings that we've seen, the volume of liquor confiscated, the quantity of illicit drugs confiscated, even the sufficient information regarding the school safety program. That's basic issues. That station level, that is not in order. So what is national management doing about it? What is the accountability chain? So if we can have responses to that. Honourable Kolobana.
Thank you, Chair. Absolutely. Perhaps they can explain in relation to what the Auditor General found and what you've claimed and just read out to us again, which differs from the findings. 1.6 billion litres confiscated, yet only 1.3 reported. So where did the 313 million litres of confiscated liquor go, disappear to? And it's ditto with the drugs. There seems to be 70 million, over 70 million kilograms that have disappeared in relation to what the Auditor General found and what you report. So please just clarify all those. The rural safety strategy, the Auditor General could not determine whether this strategy had been achieved in the various stations that you determined. This while the farmers and farm workers are being tortured to death on an almost daily basis. So please, the Auditor General says the rural safety strategy has not been implemented. You say it has. Again, we're hearing two different stories. And I'm interested personally, your stolen vehicles that you say the SAPs have recovered, is that SAPs recovering stolen vehicles, or is it private entities like Tracker recovering and then you take it over as a stolen vehicle? I'm quite interested to see that perhaps, I don't want to see you taking credit for somebody else's work. Now, something that the Auditor General said they couldn't understand why SAPS members, officials, were not facing disciplinary charges in relation to, and they have a list which they've given you, or maybe the absent, I don't know, somebody's got it, a list of names of SAPS members and their family members and their partners and their associates who are all illegally doing private business with the SAPS, with the very entity that pays them a salary. We all know how that it's fraud. It's corruption. Cannot be. And they don't know why you aren't disciplining them or throwing them out or arresting them, and neither do I, and I'd like to know about that. Please explain how it is you spent $2.7 billion on capital assets without managing to build a single police station in the last year. Where did the money go? I gather to cars, but that certainly can't be the full amount. Now, I wasn't sure, Chair, if the Regulation 45 promotions, does that fall under VISPOM?
That's the National Commissioner. He signs off on those. Yeah, so that's part of our dilemma today.
Yes.
And we will have to ask that question tomorrow morning. First thing.
All right, so I will ask him about the promotions tomorrow. As I say, I wasn't sure. Also, the contingent liabilities, Chair, does that fall under admin? Somebody? The $50 million you paid to civilians that you shot, ran over, killed, generally destroyed. It's a fifth of the IPED budget, but certainly it's SAPS members doing the killing, shooting, raping, etc. Please look into that. Talk to me about that. It's not getting any better. It hasn't been for 4 years. It's been the same. And apparently the SAPs do refer to the families of the Marikana victims. How close is that to closure now? The majority of fraud and corruption cases relating to aiding escapees. Are you dealing? You say, oh, there'll be disciplinaries about people who let your 100, whatever the number was, of people that have taken you so long to arrest and they're allowed to escape. What are you doing to these people? Are you throwing them out of the SAPs, or are you just letting them lie low for a year and then promoting them? And again, what are you doing with your members in terms of the irregular expenditure, services procured without bids? All of this relates to management, and I'm just not seeing any.
Honourable Bailey.
Thank you, Chairperson. A handful of questions from my side on this first round. Firstly, on the matter of departmental receipts as revenue, I'd just like a bit of elaboration on what did the sale of capital assets comprise, that 89.5 million rand figure. I see in the financial statements, in the actual reports, that only 26,000 of that figure was biological assets, which tends to mean the dogs and the horses that SAPS has. So there's, you know, 89.5 million rands worth of machinery and equipment. I'd just like to have some light shed on what that comprised. You know, if it's vehicles and they get decommissioned, is that the engines being sold? Why aren't they repurposed? Kind of to get a sense of that whole environment. And then I've got, I think it's a cluster of three questions relating to slide 34 and 35. That's the indicators around IPID recommendations. The first one is that if I did my subtractions correctly, there were 32 recommendations from IPID that I would have to call not implemented, because of the 967 reports that I received, 24 were not due to service termination, so that's understandable. Although one would hope if there are criminal matters there, that still gets followed up. But then of the remainder, there were 32 who were not implemented, but without a clear explanation of the reason for that. Can I ask for clarity on what that means? Are those cases that kind of just go into limbo or tend to die a slow and suffocating death, as happens in some cases? And then the second question in this cluster linked to that is that the SAPS report's receiving 967 recommendations, but the IPID report's annual report says that they forwarded 1,238 recommendations. So there's a gap of 320-odd recommendations that IPID says they forwarded, but SAPS doesn't account for having received. Is there some explanation around what that discrepancy is? And then the third question relating to slide 35 is that the figures that were given of cases finalized ultimately don't square up with slide 34, because if 100% of recommendations received were initiated, oh, my mistake. No, I'm right. If they were initiated within 30 days and 85% of those recommendations are finalized within 60 days, that means there's a 90-day time frame within which all of that happens. But that figure, that output figure of 243 out of 284, something doesn't make sense there. Unless that means those are cases that are also that the SAPS determines are found to have been, you know, unfounded or whatever the case might be. Can I just get some explanation of that gap in cases? We're talking about 700-odd cases, which in itself is not, or at least is a contestable figure, given what IPID says they have referred. So what happened to those 720-odd cases that do not count as part of the finalized? My second last question, or second last slide, Chair, is just on slide 51, the indicator on finalization rates. I do just want to acknowledge that it seems there has been some impact from that intervention, because the handful of public complaints I have referred to provincial offices from the public have had speedy replies, so just to acknowledge that. And then finally, on slide 74, the national police reaction times to complaints. This is less a question and more comments, is that I think it's important that we realize that the baseline for these figures that are calculated is the calls that actually get picked up at the police station. And we are aware as public reps of many instances where the call doesn't even get picked up. Just last Thursday afternoon, got a call from a gentleman. They called their local police station after they just had an armed invasion. Rang, no answer. when they finally drove there, the officers on duty are tick back, enjoying their evening, hardly interested in attending to them, and eventually they had to beg and plead and persuade these officers to drive with them back to the house where the robbery happened. I'm still awaiting that email from the complainant, and then I'll forward it to the relevant office. But this is the kind of experience that many members of the public are having to go through, and that's when the calls don't get picked up. And also to note that this obviously is a national average, so you're dealing with the spectrum of individual data sets that gets collected is going to be a very broad one, because, you know, those impressive-looking figures of outperforming the targets would mean nothing in a place like Nyanga or Khayelitsha, where I've dealt with complaints about very, very slow reaction times there. So it's really about drilling down into the detailed figures. Thanks, Chair.
Maybe just on that point, I mean, the AG on page 325 comes to the finding that pocketbooks couldn't be provided. Now, I mean, I think 3 years ago when General Pajeha was the commissioner, there was a commitment from this management. They will address the pocketbook issue. They will address this issue. 3 or 4 years later, more or less the same management in the top echelons, and we still sit with a pocketbook problem. That is totally unacceptable. One more song.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I will start with maybe the lesser good part of it. But it has got some serious, it raised to me serious questions about men and women serving our country when they go out for retirement. I've written a letter, Chairperson. Unfortunately, because of change of my gadgets, I've written a letter to yourself, to the Commissioner of the Eastern Cape, whereby one of our officers who served during the days, the dark days of this country in the former Transkei, went for retirement. His commanders could not process his pension payouts and all that. Up until a few weeks when we met the provincial commissioners, when one had to ask the provincial commissioner of the Eastern Cape to actually take the matter forward. Only this week, GPF has promised to pay out the pension fund of that officer who is now on retirement. When his family has been taken to slums, sitting there in slums, and the man dying, calling me, he doesn't even know me, calling me, Honorable Mlo, can you help? I just said, do we have an organization here? When people give their livelihood, and when their dues are to be paid for them to look after their families, they are just left into the pit to die. It touched me, Chairperson. I said I will raise this, and I phoned General, the head of the Eastern Cape, to say I will raise this matter, because I wonder how many of the members. Such an act is a torture to the family, the wife, and the kids of that officer when the man had to give his livelihood to the benefit of the nation. To me, I think if the national management cannot deal with those old generals of the Eastern Cape, who actually then ruined the life of that family, it will be a travesty of justice, Chairperson. I must be very honest. Because that family is nearly ruined and finished through irresponsible leadership within our police services. I thought I need to raise this because from the side of the general, the head of the Eastern Cape, it was not of her making, but thanks to that rapid response to the rescue of that Aaron Charlie, the former officer in our police services. That I wanted to raise that, Chairperson. From the side of the presentation that has been raised, I understand the reasons that are given in terms for the decline in terms of the indicators. But I wonder if General, this instability within police management is not mentioned, you know, today South African police is led by acting, this acting, I think even the cat is acting. Now, these things, Chairperson, I think, as they, none of them reflect on this. And eventually this new plundering of ranks for political expediency. If these things are not raised and we are told only the good part because the management is saying, no, we need to protect each other and all that, finally, we will be finding ourselves in a little Rwanda of our country. As one judge said, is there still a rule of law? That plundering, money laundering will take place, only foreign law enforcement agencies and countries are responding to what is happening in South Africa. Yet in South Africa, no action at all is taking place. I am raising this chairperson because I think tomorrow when we deal with the detectives, if at all, the question of Hawks and the assassination of Magaka, Sindiso Magaka in KZN, subsequently when we are light upon that, that person was killed in cash in transit in Harding. What does it mean? Does it mean the assassins are closer to the proximity of power, that they must be protected at all costs, and we as the people must be light upon by our security agencies? How many people will die? When then the acting provincial commissioner of KZN on record says police are involved in the assassination of our people in Gliblands hostel. That's what he said on oversight. I want to raise, I'm raising these things, Chairperson, because I have seen how Africa degenerated, many countries in Africa degenerated into chaos and anarchy and wars, because of defeat of ends of justice, starting from those at a political level abusing the organs of state. I cannot be part of this committee, even only if I can be quiet about these matters. I'm raising this, Chairperson, because I'm from home. Many dedicated police officers raising serious matters, which I will bring to your attention. And I'm happy that the AG raised these matters today, that some people were just parachuted to higher ranks for certain reasons, flouting even the rules of engagement. But none of these things. Now, in terms of the decline of service output and targets, does these things actually then feature in? Or then, General, we will then be told that it was because of these family disputes and all this. At the end of the day, then, not capacitating us at a lawmaking level to be able to actually assist many of you, because many of our men and women in blue jackets are willing to serve beyond the level of duty. But even only if we allow the evil to dominate this, and then we are silenced and our eyes, we allow our eyes to be blurred by wrong information, then certainly state organs will be paralyzed as they are, degenerating. Eventually police will say, see no evil, hear no evil, just be part of anarchy yourself for your own quick money making. Thank you.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair, and thanks to the presentation as well. The first one, let me start with the I think the important Chair to to record that at least the reaction of the management when the Cape Flats or the township of Philippi was under serious problem over the weekend. It's something to be commended on. I think that national management intervention to normalize the situation in that community must be commended. The key challenge going forward to Alam Reid on that issue is how the sustainability of that particular community and others. And I must be quick to say that on that issue, Chair, that the issue about the flare-ups and the issues about gang, semi-gang, formation of gang and this kind of thing is a worrying situation, particularly in the Cape Flats. And I do want to say to the management here, when they respond, because I think it's also got to do with the visible policing. Frankly, Chair, General Cruiser, you have taken the responsibility to be the acting commissioner as we hear now, right? I want to ask this question. Are you satisfied with what is happening in the Western Cape in respect to these issues? I struggle to accept, Chair, that this is what South African police services can offer to communities in those areas. I struggle to accept because I know there are many thousand men and women who are committed, but in commitment they still need to be provided with leadership. So I'm asking that question, that are you satisfied? It hopping from one problem to the other, and in that you still find the absence of leadership. And the Auditor General speaks about leadership later, and I will get to that point later. But are you satisfied? What is it that you're going to be able to do to change the situation? You have monitored the situation. You have seen the situation is not getting better. Are you going to continue to monitor it? Are you going to expect to get different results with that monitoring? I think we'll pick up on this issue again when the acting commissioner comes, because I personally raised some of these issues with him. But of course, you can see them on they play out. Tomorrow, when that happens, when you stabilize, it will bubble up at somewhere else. The issue is the plan. The issue is a visible planning. But let me get back to this. I have complimented you, but I've asked you to explain the situation of Western Cape.
I just want to indicate, when you were not present, we asked also for a report tomorrow on this current issue that happened over the weekend.
Okay.
When we start at 9, because the dilemma is the Acting National Commission isn't here today. So, yeah, you can continue.
No, thank you, Chair, for assisting me. I'm leaving that issue, but the point I'm making is that maybe they should at least explain. Now, let me get back to the quick questions. On the presentation I've been able to hear, and which is the program 2. I want to follow on you, Chair. If you look at the page 324 of the report, you see the Auditor General's report in almost 18, 19, 21, 23, 24, 24, 25, and 26, the Auditor General, what he finds, disagrees with what has been provided to him. In other words, the information, misstatement, information that disagree with what has been provided. In other words, the evidence that has been provided, which is not usable, is not helping the Auditor General in making the determination. Now, I am asking all of these points, why is it a problem? Why is it a problem? Why is it that it is like there's a lot of regression? Why are we going backwards? You've given us assurance about the working relationship that you have in terms of Statistics South Africa, yourself, quality assurance, all this kind of thing. But what I'm asking here is, why is it that we are on the reverse gear? Is there anybody in the room that can explain this for me to understand the reason why it is like this, so that at least we can say we're going forward, there's some light through the tunnel. Now, I don't know, Chair, let me, whether I can go to each one of the paragraphs and make this point, but I've highlighted all the paragraphs as to what is the problem. If they can explain this. Then I want to go to something else. If I could leave the Auditor General and just quickly just go to the some of the questions. On what has been presented, Chair, just a quick three questions I wanted to say in terms of Program 2. Of course, Detective, we're going to get there tomorrow. Is it correct for me to say, on the lens of what you have presented, General, is that on the priority areas, whether it's women, whether it's children, whether it's the serious crime, we're not meeting the target? And these are key priorities, the core of the work that we need to do. You are not meeting the target. And I think you did preface it by saying, unfortunately, you are not meeting the target. Why are we not meeting the target? But we use all the money. 99%, there are around, sometimes even a little bit more than that. Is there a specific reason why we are not meeting the target? You'd remember that this issue about target, and the issues about what you are putting forward, the argument about why 2.7 or 2.5, not 7.6% reduction, is that you're breaking it down into a year. You would remember we had a question to you about the visibility and the program visibility of policing as a core function, not as event-driven, like you're going to have a roadblock at a particular time, you're going to have 9 of them in the province, you're going to have so many. He said this is part of the core function. Because also the visibility equals deterrent on some of these issues. If you can at least explain to me on this question. The leaker aspect, in another presentation, you did not meet that target of leaker. I think the other honorable member said, but there seems to be other leaders somewhere that are not unaccounted for. I guess this is part of what the Auditor General says is a misstatement, some information that is not available. But I just want to ask the question, why is it a problem in this person? You plan to meet it. You plan to implement this, but you didn't actually meet the target. Why? Can I say, maybe, will you say that there was no more leaker in the township? You basically rated every Shebin and leaker that is illegal dry. There was nothing, it was empty. But my experience on every township over weekends. It's contrary to this. So why is this a problem? Quickly, Chair, on the leadership, maybe I will leave this. The leaders. No, I was just asking the leaders questions. Chair, quickly, or maybe I can leave it here for next round.
Thank you very much.
I don't. Let me leave this.
Members, we will now take a break until 2 o'clock. 2 o'clock, and we will come back to you. 2 o'clock. There is a limited lunch available, so I just want to apologize to our guests that is Parliament's cost containment, but we will start at 2 o'clock, after 2 o'clock. Thank you very much. Colleagues, the second issue, I got one or two questions, and it's also in program two with relation to the crime statistics. Now, the crime statistics haven't been yet tabled in for public consumption. I think it must still go to cabinet. Now, what we have arranged with the ministry, I think the crime statistics will be announced on the 10th of October, but on the 17th of October, the minister will come to the committee. So that interaction with the executive authority will take place on that Tuesday, the 17th of October. So I just want to remind members of that. So let's go to the responses, and I mean there's various. We will come to you, Honourable Molabatsi. We'll come to you. Let's have first the first round of responses, and then who you want to. Okay. Let's take your question, and then we go to SAPS. Yes.
My first question is, you see, we're talking of a leadership problem in SAPS, and I see now General Shezi sent in somebody on her behalf. General Masia sent somebody on her behalf. Can we get some clarity what's happening there? My first question is, what was the reason for procuring the 500,000 goods and services transaction without inviting competitive bids as required by Treasury? My second, how many, Chair? My second one, majority of your fraud and corruption cases are related to aiding escapees. What measures do you have in place to address this? My third one, tell us about the increase in claims against SAPS by other departments. My last one in this round, you are not consistent in disciplining your members. Some are disciplined, some are not. What is the reason for this? Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, well, you've joined us now. I just want to give just what I've said previously. The first thing is tomorrow we're going to meet outside Parliament because there's a lack of venues. There's a lack of venues available. So we will probably meet at the Sun Square in town, but the Secretariat will communicate with SAPS as well as the members during the course of the afternoon. Just to confirm, there will also be transport arrangements. The second issue relates to the police statistics. They haven't yet been officially made available. I think it must still go to Cabinet, but the arrangement we've made as a MANCO with the ministers, the minister will come to the committee on the 17th of October, Tuesday, with regard to the engagement of the stats, the crime stats, and I think the public announcement will be on the 10th of October. So I just want to remind members, Tuesday, 17 October, because I know members must plan for the various other committee engagements. Honourable Groenewald, you've got questions at this stage. We dealing currently with program 1 and 2 as well as the AG report, and tomorrow we're going to deal with program 3, 4 and 5. Honourable Groenewald.
Chair, then, are they not answering for the first round first?
Yes. Yeah.
So we're doing a second round of questions before they've answered the first?
No.
So it's just for the members who weren't here. Got.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe the question has been asked, and I know it's program 1 and 2. So there's one thing I want to ask. Well, there are many questions. It's more a general question because I know you allow more general questions as such. Besides other news bulletins we read about the acts of the police and so on, there's one I want to refer to. It was this weekend in the report where there was a joint operation between the special unit of the Hawks intelligence, this pulse, as far as I know, and the flying squad, where there was a high-speed chase from Kroonstad to the Nampo site just outside of Botafogo. The people they've chased have stopped there. They found a lot of weapons. R4s, R5s, ammunition, explosives, detonators, everything. But Chairperson, the criminals got away. No arrest has been made. They got at the car, but everybody was gone. Now, I know the terrain there. It's not that there's a lot of crop fields and everything that they can disappear in it. It has been harvest time. The farmers are busy plowing at the moment. So it's open spaces. And they had the K9 unit as well. Now, Chairperson, just one question. How is it possible to have such an operation and the people just disappear? They can't catch them. That's my one. The other one, Chairperson, and I suppose maybe the question has been asked about, and I presume everybody has asked about the Philippi and the Marikana shootings. My information is, and it has been said by a community leader, that the police are too scared and afraid to go into that area. Maybe someone has asked that question. I also would like to know the answer on that, please. Thank you.
With regard to that, Honourable Groenewald, we've asked General Kruiser that they tomorrow at 9 give us an update on the investigation and the current circumstances there. So we'll deal with that tomorrow morning. Thank you, members. Let's go to General Kruiser and his team from SAMS. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I think we want to say from the onset is that the AG is disappointed. We are even more disappointed in the findings of the AG. We accept the report fully, and we take ownership of the report as it is, and we were very disappointed in the outcomes of the findings itself. It was very clear to us that we had to take stock of ourselves in terms of where we're going. And I called the meeting. We were, as top management, we sat with the provinces affected and the station commissions affected itself. And we drafted a very clear plan in terms of what we need to do around those issues itself. What was very clear to us is that there was an issue of governance which we had to tighten up and strengthen. There's no doubt about that. And we spoke about the Regulation 8, which defines the hierarchy of the police that we should properly implement to ensure proper accountability around the issues itself. On the issue of slow responses, we sat down and defined how we're going to ensure that this doesn't happen again in the future. And what was also clear, Jen, because we also completed as MI our report of last year, our findings of last year. And the findings are more in line with what the AG. The biggest finding in terms of what we found in terms of compliance was dereliction of duty. And this comes through in the findings itself. So we will have to really dig deep into ourselves and deal with it. The other issue was command and control. It's one of the key findings again, which we found, and I think if you look at our results, it's indicative of what the AG has found. And then the issue of consequence management amongst the three of the top 10 things we found in terms of those issues. So we have a report which we have to go and we're busy analyzing, and as the leadership of the police, we have committed to take ownership and then correct things forward before we answer the other questions. Just to say that we have taken ownership of the report with great disappointment, but we will brief the ACT team when it comes tomorrow in terms of the decisions we've taken with the provincial commission and the station commissioners and consequences that must take place so that we can move forward and hope that our next report will really be much better. Thank you, Chair.
General Cruiser, on that one, I want to do a follow-up, and other members are also welcome. The dilemma, I take note of your response, but the dilemma we have, especially in programs 2 and 3, and we'll come tomorrow to program 3, is the repeat findings. It's not new things. It's issues from 3-4 years ago. It's the same top management. There's maybe here and there a chop and change in the provincial commissioners. But And that's the question. Is the accounting officer leading that process? Because we indicated the example that AG gave. SAPS was warned about the possibility of the qualifications early on in the management letter process. Too slow response. And in the end, the time ran out. So it's the question of urgency. It's easy to delegate it now to this or that, but at the buck must stop at the accounting officer and the top 5 or 6 acting national commissioners. They're responsible. Nobody else. If they don't lead that process with urgency, we're not going to, we're going to have repeat findings again next year of the note of the books, the pocketbooks. I mean, it's a basic thing. And we're not, so that's my concern. Who is driving that turnaround strategy? Is it again delegated to a deputy national commissioner or somebody else to meet? Is the accounting officer driving that process? That's my question. Honorable
Malabatsi and Honorable Ramatakwane. Yeah, Chair. Whilst we're speaking of leadership, you know, this structure of cluster commander is almost toothless. You know, in some instances, you find the cluster commander located in the police station precinct. When you look at the performance of the police station, it's like zero, almost zero. This structure of cluster needs a real jacking up. It's almost non-existent. It's just the name in most instances. It's just the name. Thanks, Chair.
No, thank you, quick point. General, if I walk you back to 2016, the meeting we had around the Auditor General's report and the matters of emphasis, and the meeting with the audit committees, what came out of those meetings was a concern that the management is irresponsible. The audit committees find certain things. They try to suggest that a certain action should be taken, but matters doesn't get attended to. Now, I just want to find out from you, one of the things that helps your management, that gives you these warnings, before the AG, long before the AG comes, is the audit committee. But why aren't you taking the audit committee recommendation serious? What did they tell you in the preceding period before the Auditor General's findings? Remember, they meet quarterly. So they met, they submitted their report. What went wrong? You see, the problem I have, Chair, with respect, General Cruiser says they're taking responsibility. Yes, they should. Management should. But what we're not getting, I don't get an explanation of something that went wrong. What went wrong? System went wrong. Human being went wrong. They did not comply with certain things here. This is a consequence that you've already implemented in here.
So at least that is the reassuring, because then we know that action is taken. Now, if you are giving us a general response, that there is a turnaround plan, we'll meet again in at the end of the next year when you look at another auditor, the annual report, and then things would have perhaps gone worse than what it is today. So I want to just get something. If the management is not ready now, I'm happy that tomorrow we're still meeting with them, that they actually give us the problems as they are presented, because we need to oversight this thing. And if we don't understand it, it's going to be every time a moving target, a slippery thing that you can't actually touch, you can't see. What is the actual problem? I did not go into detail on the questions I wanted to ask in the Auditor General. They point to something. They point to something, things that are falling apart. Now, I want to ask, why are these things falling apart? I can also ask a direct question. Why these are falling apart? But let me park that direct question for now, because I want to ask it. Because the reason I want to ask it is because I don't understand. Suddenly. I don't understand the sudden. The last 8-9 years, there's been a proper cruising, things happening, addressing this matter. Sudden qualification on certain things that you said. Why? Is it a deliberate move? Is somebody not doing their work? Is it a failure? Please tell us something, so that at least we understand that there's something that has gone wrong. I mean, there has been a very unhealthy interaction before around this section with the former NASCO, Ria Piecha, about the certain issues here. Now, I'm struggling to make sense of it, to comprehend the problem. If you at least can help us understand it. If you look at the AG's painting, it speaks volume. Now, you can't say, General, with respect, there's a turnaround plan which does not speak to us as what actually went wrong. Has anybody been fired for this? If I ask specific questions. Somebody must take responsibility. The chair says this is the responsibility of national commissioners, and there are 5 of them. Where does that backstop? Who must see this thing? Or is it the NASCOM, acting NASCOM? If it's national NASCOM, then obviously there must be consequences. Because if it fails to lead on this, you can't lead. It's part of it. Part of what goes through the job, actually, unfortunately. So, Chair, I'm sorry, but I'm not hearing, and I know you are battling. I'm not hearing the reasons what went wrong. I'm hearing we have identified the problem. We have a turnaround plan.
Colonel
Bonner.
Yeah, Chair, it just strikes me as so odd that this book was printed with the full knowledge of what was said in the front and what is said at the back by the Auditor General. The Auditor General says, I can only find 7,000 firearms recovered when you're claiming 17,000. I can only find this number when you're claiming that number. And yet it's presented to us like it's gospel. Like then, you know, there we go, reading it all through, going through. No mention of the fact that actually the figures in front of us were called into question in the back of the book. There's two silos working, and it's, I understand the statement, we've taken it aboard, we accept it, all right, but there was no reference to it at all. Each time we went through the figures, they read, there they are, those are the figures, so the Auditor General must be wrong. It's very bizarre. It's very bizarre that when they received this report, nothing was done to change.
simple indicator like the school safety program that General Rawe presented, target met. But if you look at the AG's report on page 324, they couldn't find substantial evidence for that statement. So at the end of the day, it's a management thing, and it goes right through the organization. It's like the pocketbook thing. I mean, if there's a station where there's not pocketbooks kept, what happened to the station commander, the cluster commander? Nothing. I mean, that is the dilemma. Consequent management is a huge problem. And, I mean, we are looking to the acting national commissioner and the top five deputy national commissioners. They must provide us with a game plan to get out of this. And I don't hear anything so far, but General Cruz, over to you.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, many of the questions asked, we have the second presentation, which deals with the AG findings and how we respond to those things. Would you speak to some of the questions raised here? Remember we said we will separate the two reports. We have our annual report in terms of findings. We then analyzed the AG's findings around those issues and understood what the problems were. And we've got our whole plan, which is here, which we want to present to the committee to deal with those issues itself. But I think let us deal with the questions and maybe afterwards we can present it if you see for
chair. Well, I think the basic issue raised by Omar Ramatakane states, I mean, there's no rebuttal of it. You've got a qualification, and the AG indicated the root cause, but there is no submission from your side to verify the root cause from the AG or gave an alternative explanation, and that's a concern. That's a concern.
Chair, in our presentation, we will show where we find where the foreign. We have a presentation which speaks to those various issues.
AG complains that you're irresponsive. They work with you, they ask you questions, they say answer these questions, and you just go on hiding. What is the problem there? Somebody can just explain why it is a problem. Is it a problem because maybe the information keeping, the records, is not available, or the record is dispersed, or the record is in another region of South Africa, in another province, we are unable to find it. But the police are 24/7. So that's the question I'm really struggling to get.
Any of the deputy nationals, anybody here of the top management can respond. I mean, we need to know that.
The slide on and explain it through one slide.
Chair, I will explain what we've done. When the audit cycle started in the previous financial year, the audit cycle started, it was evident that the plan that we were implementing at the time was not working because we had the same findings again, the same issues were identified again, and despite the plans that were implemented from divisional level, from provincial level. The current situation that we are facing is for the South African Police Service to fix what we are currently facing is we need to admit what is wrong. And if we look at the, I will briefly explain this slide when we talk about the four lines of defense to ensure good governance in any department, any company, and SAPS. If you look at the first line of defense, where we have station commanders, that portion there, where we have station commanders, where we have cluster, provincial, and divisional commissioners, and I'm going to start at the bottom. It's the role and responsibility of divisional commissioners to develop internal controls to ensure that we properly manage this organization, that we have proper governance. Going lower down, from provincial cluster down to station unit level, they are responsible for implementation. So we have to ensure that we have appropriate controls that are properly implemented, properly communicated. That includes your standard operating procedures, your standing orders, etc. The current reality that we are facing as management is that first line of defense in SAPS has failed. It's not failing, it has already failed. And that is evident in the repeat findings that we see. And we did, in my office, and I can only talk on behalf of the performance portion where I meet. I have weekly meetings with the Auditor General. As we went through the process and we tried to, and we did attend to what was possible at the time and what could be done, etc., etc. Now, the root cause that we identified here, why is this first line of defense failing, is what General Kruger said. It's simple, straightforward. There is problem with compliance. People are not doing. And I can say to you, Chair, that the findings that you are referring to, the findings that we see today in our audit report that talks to the PDO, to the performance tables, all of them could have been prevented. Every single one of them. There's nothing complicated. It's simplistic, straightforward things. But if we want to fix that problem, then we must have compliance. And if there's not compliance, then there must be consequences. Now, through the audit process that we've just been through, as I said, it was evident from the interim audit where we started trying to fix things. The problem that we were facing is this organization is big. When we talk about PDOs, we're talking about a footprint of 1,144 police stations and. So we could not get everywhere to see what can be done in preparation for the final one. The audit findings that you see today is not something that came today or last year. These things have been coming for the last couple of years. The audit methodology changed. To have a material finding is no longer 20%, it's a 10% error rate. So they become more evident more clear in the latest report. Now, we found when we did the analysis, as I said, non-compliance, the rules are there. The people are just not doing what they're supposed to do. Consequence management was almost nothing. And I'm talking about our environment from the performance tables. There, here and there we had incidents where consequence management was taken. When we look at the auditors, the second line of defense where you have management intervention, where we've indicated the stations where General Kruger and his team are busy managing and intervening. Internal audit, we have findings. Now we have a problem there that the evidence is also that we are not responding to the internal audit findings. Internal audit is giving you warning signs. They are telling you things are wrong. We have to respond. We are building a combined assurance database where we took all the recommendations from all oversight bodies, the AGSA, internal audit, PCOP, civilian secretariat, DPME. We've populated a database with every single finding and every single recommendation that talks to SAPS. It is enormous what we need to do. We are facing a big problem. But the main issue, the reason why we see those reds is because we are failing in terms of compliance and we are not acting where there's non-compliance. And if we want to fix that, if SAPS wants to come here next year or the year after that with a better audit report, we need to take serious action. And so to answer your question, that's our problem.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sorry for that, I was not here in the morning when you present. Chairperson, I'm a little bit worried. for how long are we going to hear about the non-compliance? Every time when they tell us people are not complying, people are not complying, what steps did they take? But because today they were supposed to tell us we disciplined this one and that one. We are going to hear this non-compliance every day, and they are going to tell us that they have got 1,144 police stations. Where are the members who are doing the job, the inspection and everything, Chairperson? Because this non-compliance, every day it's non-compliance, non-compliance, and they are doing nothing. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm worried.
Thank you, Chair. It's just one simple question. That might be slightly academic, but I think is fundamental to the issue at hand and the feedback we got from Minister General Robbie. Is this not a case of the fact that the SAPS as an organization is too big and too cumbersome to control and manage operationally from one center? Is this not an opportunity to investigate the feasibility of a more decentralized approach to the aspects of the functioning of the police service that lend themselves to that? The committee was in the UK, Chair, you remember? We looked at international best practice, which in the UK and other contexts shows that localized policing, where practicable, is what works best. And, you know, given that, for example, provinces have a constitutional oversight mandate as well, I don't see why we can't empower provincial commissioners to have more authority in certain areas where we strengthen provincial inspectorates, where we can ensure alignment with provincial secretariats, and we also have the provincial legislatures to carry some of the load, so that this overall environment, we spread the load a bit more and not burden ourselves with the inefficiencies and the bottlenecks and the organizational overload of trying to manage this huge monster from the center. I really think it's a direction that SEPS management needs to start looking at and that we need to start prodding the police service into.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I think Honorable Mbele is providing escape clause on the subject. Now, the escape clause can't work today, maybe sometimes in the future. For now, you see, General Abhi, with respect, you have identified the problem, and you keep repeating the people are not doing what they expect to do. We've heard this before. Now I ask the question, is it expectation that we, as a committee, portfolio committee, must fire the people who are not doing what they're supposed to do? Or is that the management responsibility? I mean, the management is you sitting on that side. You take that responsibility. It doesn't cut the ice. Explanation of people are not doing what they're not supposed to do. You can't tell the people over and over again that same person do this and he can't do it and hope one day he will do it. He or she will do it. Unless you take particular step. Some of those steps is either you train the person. If you can't train the person, you place a person, the appropriate person, at a particular job to be able to do that job. Only at that point you will then expect results. Your explanation suggests a complete failure from your office. If I were to paraphrase and just speak straight French, this is a complete failure of your management. You are hoping for different results by just simply saying to people, do this and they don't do it, do this, they don't do it. The result of which is qualified audit today. It may be worse. Could have been worse. So the question, General Cruiser,
turnaround, you're going to come to turnaround. Why don't you just simply just tell us? One of your turnaround plan is that those who have failed you in this way, because there's a cascading effect here, has received X punishment. Management at the top that has failed to manage this thing, there is now a process of them getting X, because obviously this got cascading effect. It has to cascade. Those management that have failed at the top equally are equally to blame. The organization is this state because of their failure. So all I'm saying, sir, is that repeating this information for me doesn't cut the ice, because I've heard it before. I was expecting different results from different action. But unfortunately, we'll guess same action that you have not done anything about it. Or maybe we'll hear, maybe we must not preempt, maybe we'll hear that you have fired lots of people. Have employed or complete new people that has got a particular capacity and qualification to run the job. Maybe we'll hear later.
This one incident in KZN during our visit there, the cluster commander, I think from Richards Bay, when we confronted the brigadier or general major about inspecting the stations under him, his first issue was he doesn't got a staff officer and an officer for this and that. So there's an issue of taking responsibility. And that's part of management. You must take responsibility. You must be able to make very unpalatable decisions. That comes with the territory. And I think that is one of the missing things. Honorable, yes.
No, Chairperson, thanks. You know, Chairperson, it goes back to what I was requesting earlier on, because at times I don't want myself to go straight on the victim, so that we can better have an understanding. When it comes to this first line of defense, which is failing, I'll be very straightforward to you, General Cruz, as part of that big five within the structure. Do you have powers to appoint those people? Or on our part, as part of lawmakers, we give you just empty tins to say manage these empty tins that have got no capacity at a political level. I am raising this because, you know, what Jefferson is raising is exactly the terrible experience that you will get, whereby then station commanders like the Kwahlabisa will be battling without even an aerial support from above because of these people who are on monthly payroll but just doing absolutely nothing. And Chairperson, I'm raising this because at the end of the day, I'm quite aware of the conflict between those who are supposed to execute management and those who take political decisions. So that at the end of the day, we can then be able to review to say, what really makes the system fails is the appointment of the cluster commanders based on their performance, or it is based on political handpicking of people. Then lastly, I understand what General is raising as the kind of failure of the at that level of first line. But even at your level itself, you know, recently it hasn't actually healed in my mind that we will have an acting national commissioner who, when asked by this committee, he says, I would appoint this acting head of crime intelligence prior finalization of vetting because I trust him. A week later, no. After that, I will supervise crime intelligence until further notice to this committee as a responsible oversight. When I go home, former bodyguard of the president has been appointed. A week later, no metric. I'm raising these things because even only if we cannot interrogate it, I'll be failing in my line of duty, of political duty and accountability to the people who made me come here to Parliament. Because I can see at the end of the day that somewhere, as managers, you are trying to nurse the unnurseable. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Groenewald, then Honourable Molabatsi, and then Honourable Mula, and then we go to the other responses, yes.
Chairperson, I will be sure, but I want to link up with my colleague, the Honourable Ramahlakane. You know, I think I don't have enough fingers and toes to count how many times I personally have spoken about corrective management. Chairperson, with great respect, I mean, it's like a child. And I don't say that people are childish or children. If somebody does something wrong and you do nothing about it, do you think there will be an improvement to ensure that they don't do it again? In fact, Chairperson, it will become worse. I'm telling you, I don't know how many times I heard about the turnaround strategy. And let me just explain to the members of the police. I want to say you are actually running in circles when it comes to turnaround strategies. What does that mean? If you take a circle and you're 0 degrees and you turn around, it's 180 degrees, then you're moving backwards. And then you realize you're moving backwards, then you decide, no, you move another 180, then you're back where you was. You're moving in circles. There's no progress. Because theoretically we hear this is going to be done. It looks very fine, very nice. In fact, I did my master's degree on development and all that sort of things. It's nice pictures and nice diagrams and all that sort of things. But Chairperson, in practice, we don't experience it. And my question is a simple one. Why don't we have correction on these matters? Why don't we have people to be disciplined on the matter? It's a simple question. Why? Don't come with, no, this or that or what or come. But then I also want to say, Chairperson, with great respect, what I've heard from the General now, I think the committee, we must some other way have to have a session where we could consider and get some legal advice from the parliamentary legal advisers to see what we can do about this situation, because it's actually getting out of hand. And also, what we can do to put pressure on the president to appoint a national commissioner who is a competent, experienced person. I know all, but that's why I say, because, Chairperson, personally, I think this is also part of the fact that we only have acting commissioners. Well, we can go back even further, because in the past we didn't have national commissioners who were experienced or competent to be a police commissioner. And really, Chairperson, the people outside, we are reaping the fruit now of that. I just had a media interview, because of a woman, she was robbed, the police couldn't help her, but luckily they've got a WhatsApp group, and they caught the criminal. So the public say the police won't help us. I think the latest statistics show a 50% of people who have trust in the police services. So is that part of the strategy from the side of the police to say, ah, don't worry, the people will look after themselves. It's their problem. Chairperson, we cannot tolerate that, really.
Honourable Molabatsi, and then we'll go to the responses, yes. Thank you, members. Let's go to the response. Yes, Honourable Mula, sorry, you wanted second bite. Yes.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, we've got an acting national commissioner and 5 deputies, if I'm not mistaken. Are you doing your job or what? I think, Chairperson, one day you must have an oversight in the national offices, because we've got problem when we do our oversight. When we go down there to the station, there's a big problem. And the office in national, they are not going there. Because when you ask them, when was the inspectorate office came into your province, they said they didn't come the whole year. What are they doing? No, Chairperson, I'm sorry to say that if you are going to, we can't have dogs that we don't have teeth, or we must take action, Chairperson. Thank you.
This is the prerogative of the committee in our recommendations, which we finalize on Friday. You can come with whatever recommendations you want to make, if you can convince your colleagues. So we'll take all those issues on board. General Cruiser, if we can go to the other responses.
When will start?
Thank you, General Cruiser. A very good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I needed to respond on the issue of consequence management. What is it that we are doing as the organization? Emanating from the audit outcomes, we looked at the audit outcomes and we realized that we have to deal with consequence management in terms of two. In an area where there has been unsatisfactory performance or a misconduct which would have been identified by the audit outcomes. And then we said, what do we mean by unsatisfactory performance? That will be where an employee would have failed to achieve the agreed to work outputs as required in accordance with his or her performance plan or agreement. And then misconduct will be where an employee would have failed to adhere to rules, policies, procedures, and prescripts of the department. And then we said there will be an investigation which will then indicate what were the reasons for the unsatisfactory performance or misconduct. In an event where the causes or reasons for such are due to no fault of the employee, the management of poor performance implementation plan process should be initiated. And the no-fault principle applies where there is a lack of resources, lack of capacity, or lack of performance due to personal or health reasons. And then what will be the typical remedies thereof? We will ensure that there is formal training, there must be closer supervision, there must be mentoring, there must be counseling, and on-the-job allocation of adequate resources, and also referral to the structures, for example, your EHW services, etc. And where there has been a misconduct or a transgression where members would have failed to comply with rules, policies, procedures, in that event, we said for such, the employee will have to be disciplined in terms of the disciplinary processes. And evident to how serious we are taking this audit report, it's the meeting that was referred to by General Cruiser, where we invited provincial commissioners who have been fingered in the reports and station commanders, and we have already communicated the expectations from us. They will be expected to implement consequence management in line with the practical guidelines that we have given to them, and we believe we can turn around the situation. Thanks.
Hear you, General Nguyenia, but I mean that we must hear from the acting accounting officer who is not here,
okay.
Because the second issue is that first line of defense. Everybody in that room is part of that first line of defense. So it's good to say the provincial commissioners and those station commissioners, but what about the others in the first line of defense? And that's why we need the acting national commission in the room. Honorable Grunewald.
Thank you, Chair. Let's take that diagram. Misconduct, omission, transgression. In the event that the causes, reasons for such are due to the fault of the employee, the disciplinary procedures of the subs must be invoked. Wow. That's quite logical. My question is, how many people, on how many cases has disciplinary procedures been invoked?
We talking in terms of the the feedback on the annual report, the AG report. We have just indicated that we convened a meeting last week Friday, where there was accounting. And we expect of those senior managers to conduct the investigation, which will inform the steps that will be taken against those members. we will definitely be taking steps against members.
No, I was going to say that you helped me out, Chair, already. But let me add on that. General Rabi was a pain to explain what he does and the problem that he's encountering with respect to meeting with the Auditor General. What you explained in general going out there in terms of this does not necessarily address or deal with the issue, because he says this has been ongoing. This problem has been ongoing. It's not new. You were saying last Friday we had a meeting and then we agreed this is now what we need to do. But the question I'm asking, why there is a delinkage? Why there seems to be a disjuncture between me as I'm looking at this? General Rabi has experienced this thing for a long time. Consequence management only start on Friday after the Friday meeting. What happened in the last 2 years, previous 2 years, when the similar repeat issues were raised in the audit process? Why haven't we started earlier enough? We'd have avoided the qualification. Maybe I'm hypothetical. But I'm just saying, haven't listened to his painfully explaining this process. It is not new, this. Why sudden reaction now? Why wouldn't you taken up this issue earlier on, long before? Previous year, 50%, the chair spoken about. Why not last year? Why now? Is it something maybe you can explain better?
Maybe want to add before, I mean, if you look at slide 22 of the AG, disciplinary steps were not taken against officials who has incurred and permitted now the compliance issues, Department of Police. Disciplinary hearings were not held for confirmed cases, Department of Police. Allegations not properly investigated, no evidence obtained, 25% Department of Police. So assurance to say there's going to be no action, I don't think the committee will buy it. We need further assurances. Honourable Khlongu.
Don't buy it.
Yeah. No, Jefferson. No, I think you are correct, Jefferson. You know, Jefferson, AG's office, the lady who was there at the back, says, no, we do have names of people, which is not even something difficult to say you're going to investigate something, the unknown, in terms of the transgressions. But Jefferson, you see, in terms of the SOPs of police, I think every department has got rules of engagement to follow. Yeah, I understand this gap at the first line of defense, but to me, this thing seems, because according to that AG report, they talk even of certain members doing business with government and all that. This is a serious corruption. That is what they are presenting according to the AG's report, which at the end of the day is a mother of all evils that you will get then even permeating to the community. I don't want to mention that question of Cleveland and that officer who's just killing people there. But when we have got even our own acting national commissioner in that appointment of that previous head of crime intelligence acting, dereliction of duty, who to act in that particular type of a situation, knowing that now you take serious information of the state, you put it at the disposal of a person who is not even vetted, who is a risk to the security of the country. And I was shocked to get that man is now redeployed somewhere in Northern Cape. I just said, in South Africa, if we can proceed like this, Chairperson, it means we are just recurring the cancer to say it must go and infect the uninfected areas because of this logic of impunity and abuse of office, whereby then, even only if you, as my father, you are actually then breaking the law. As my commander, what do you expect of me? Thank you.
Chair, when are we getting that the report of the Ludwaba Commission? Ludwaba Commission of the... That commission that was set up to investigate. No. Yeah.
You refer to the former acting head of CR?
Yes.
Yeah, but that's right, yeah. By the provincial commissioner of Limpopo.
Yeah. Ludwaba. Yes, Ludwaba.
Let's go through the responses. I think the members, Honorable Kalabana, you also raised your hand. Sorry.
Yeah. I have to interrupt your conversation. This business of telling us about consequence management, you can see what this committee thinks of consequence management in the SAPS, because we never hear of anybody fired. If you recall, there was a criminality audit done. 1,448 members of the SAPS have criminal records, ranging from murder to rape, assault, fraud, bigamy, went on. Not one of them was ever fired. All protected. And in fact, many of them promoted to very, very high ranks. And this is what we're seeing here. We're seeing the Auditor General say to us this morning, we can't understand why the people who were doing business with the SAPS, officials doing business with the SAPS that we found out last audit, have never faced disciplinary hearings. They're still there. And you know what? They're still doing business. Their families are doing business. Their spouses are doing business. Their relatives are doing business. And their close associates are doing business with the SAP. They're giving themselves tenders, is what's happening. And nothing's being done. So I'm sorry, but with all due respect, to come in here and even put on the screen the phrase consequence management, it does not exist in the SAPs. It has never existed in all the years that I've been involved with this committee. Never existed. I have never seen the fact that we have a Richard Mdluli pulling in his millions and never fired from the SAPs. You protect people till they retire, you give them a padded pension, and off they go. That's what happens to people who convict crimes in the SAPs. Tell me who's been fired from the SAPs for any crime in the last year, then maybe I'll start to believe what you're telling us.
That's an easy one, no one.
Thank you, members. Let's go through the responses. General Skutter.
Thank you, sir. I will start quickly with the network assets. But before I start, I would just like to bring to the attention of members, I don't know whether the AG said so as well, last year on the annual financial statements, and I will speak from an annual financial statement point of view, we had basically had three findings: immovable tangible assets, the work in progress additions, operating lease commitments of buildings, and then also contingent liabilities. All three of those have not reappeared. We've done a lot of hard yards in that respect. We have appointed people. We've created secondary databases. We have cleared our data sets, and those do not reappear. And that is exactly what we said to this committee in October, sir. So those are not repeated and they're gone. If I then go to the CETA network asset scenario, in 1999-2000, the CETA model was implemented with various objectives in mind. The SAPS and SANDF, with their resources and volumes, were first participants, actually founding members. IT personnel, buildings, vehicles, mainframes, like the Ruinomeras, and network assets were transferred to CETA in accordance with the CETA Act, business agreement, and different annual SLAs. SAPs were only responsible for end-user equipment, that is like desktops, laptops, printers, and CPUs, and screens. This practice has since been embedded in subsequent BAs and SLAs. Just a little bit of background, there's much more. It's a highly technical aspect. CETA has not only
procure equipment for SAFS, but also provide services. And when we made the payments, we procured the service, not the assets, so to speak. Remember the National Treasury Practice Note, must and may, it's a must. The same applied to network services in this regard. In recent years, CETA could not provide the network services, and we've indicated it to this committee, and we have complained about it. Remember, in this committee, first it came to the forefront to say, will you be able to implement e-docket, ICDMS? You will not have sufficient pipelines, if I may use that slang word, for the dissemination. So what people, CETA did from 14-15, they said, we cannot do it, but there's our mechanism. Go, you go and do it. Be that as it may, this matter then came into being and it was discussed. Also the National Commission and the Audit Committee and the AG on senior level, on a very high level, and then it went also to the Treasury for a ruling, who didn't say yay or nay, but said the process that SAFS have followed in terms of Section 42 to transfer this to CETA was not what they would like to see, was not in compliance in this respect. But now we must remember, we spent a lot of money in terms of our network upgrades. The National Commissioner cannot go and sign every line. We always have a vendor, a CETA person, and a TMS police person there. Be that as it may, we've accepted the report, but there's some work to do. Some of the work will now evolve around things such as, should the mainframes and the Runumeras also come back to the police? Because a similar thing applies. What about things such as DPW and police stations? Because the owner is actually somebody else, but because you argue substance over format, you must actually report on it and not the other institution. So what are we going to do with Birunumeras? What are we going to do? We will have to get more powers to dispose of the asset because currently we can't dispose. It's with CETA. Be that as it may, I've just indicated a few things that need clarification. We do have a plan, and I think we have a track record also in last year in order to address this. Now, this is just the last two slides, and we will, when we appear before you on the 1st of November, have our elaborated plan of how we're going to do it, what we're going to do in order to get this also out of the books, but also not harming CETA. More than 60% of their income statement is police money. If we, for instance, start withdrawing from CETA to a certain extent, you can think about the model. Be that as it may, we say we will assess again the accounting model. That we will do in order to get the finer detail. And then we will also confirm the completeness of the SAPS assets that we have purchased directly from the suppliers. We will then also report this in the interim financial statements. We have four interim reports every year. And by the way, we had numerous audit queries, and I think we responded to all of them on the annual financial statement side. Numerous. Within 2-3 days, we even sent people taking photos. This is the asset. This is how it looks. This is its number, and so forth. So we will consider it again and confirm then also the assets that was procured by CETA, not by ourselves, in terms of networks. Then also confirm as to whether new network assets are intended for procurement during the current financial year. I have to be honest with members, as we sit here, we don't have a mechanism to proceed with our capacitation of our network environment because we struggle to get the delivery mechanism from CETA. Remember, we can't go into that scenario. We need it from CETA. Then also we will have to look at our SCUA items, because the SCUA items, as I have just said, previously you purchased it as goods and services. Now you will have to procure an asset, which is a different ballgame in terms of your vesting of your expenditures in terms of your SCUAs. We will have to look at our SLAs and our BAs. We had a tentative meeting, I must confirm as though, with Dr. Mohapi from CETA tomorrow and or the day thereafter to say, is this the way you also see this going? Because otherwise, we must transfer these assets to you as soon as possible in order for the economy of moral to work. And then we will also have to look at how we're going to share the action request for service, the AR system. Because in the current environment, the moment we implement a piece of equipment, a cable, or any other network asset, it goes onto the CETA ARS system, and they then control what software can run on that network and whatnot. But that is what we will do. We will then update the SAPS asset register to reflect network assets procured directly by SAPS as phase one, and I've indicated there in the first paragraph. Consult with CETA as to ensure identification, valuation, and transfer of network and hosting assets procured by CETA on behalf of SAPS since 1999. But is this the intention? I don't think so. Maybe it will only be the direct procurement, but nobody is absolutely certain, not even the AG themselves, so to speak. And then CETA to compile a list of network and hosting assets transferred to CETA with inception of CETA, if we have to take it onto our asset register, that's phase three, and update SAPS asset register and disclose information annually on all network hosting immovable infrastructure assets. Our whole intention with this plan, and there's a more elaborative plan, will be to get this thing out by means of the next report. But the fact of the matter is this is an anomaly. It's highly technical of nature, but we have a plan to address it. In order to take it up, will not be, it will be a big job, but it can be done, and I think we've proved with the other three it can be done. So I'm also going to ask General Makosi, is also...
Just on that issue, yeah. I mean, the AG said to us that SAPS had enough time.
Let me just put it to you, sir, and I think General Makosi can also maybe elaborate on this. There was informal discussions at some point in time, and they will give you the first time that the draft finding was issued. It was never found in the interim management report, so to speak. And even at that time, there was even a bit of uncertainty as to how we should go. That's why we went to the Treasury. Both consented to that for a ruling, and that's the normal practice in this regard. But yes, at the end, there was not enough time when we got the ruling from the National Treasury, so to speak. Not enough time for us not to include it, but not enough time for them to audit it then in this regard. You will see at the relevant note, we have included a sentence with the values in the annual financial statements. We have done it. So the values of our direct purchases are there. Now one can always say, yeah, you could have acted maybe a bit earlier or later. The fact is it was very intense. The National Commissioner, Audit Committee, AG, everybody was involved for a period of time in order to get to a conclusion, sir.
Maybe just on that point, we've invited the Chair of the Audit Committee to today's meeting. He's not here. Is there any reason?
Chair, they said they will speak to you. They were not available. And it was in Natal, I think. But they said they couldn't make it. We spoke to them again this morning. Yeah. They said they will speak directly to them.
We haven't received a formal apology, but we're going to anyway meet with all the audit committees in October. General Ramakosi, is he going to expand? Thank you, General Ramakosi.
Thank you, Chair. Just to confirm that the issue that has been raised by the AG is different in interpretation in terms of how we've applied the Act in relation to, we call it an about 10 from CETA's point of view, because this is how they've always accounted for these assets, and then all of a sudden they decided that these assets must be placed in our books. I can confirm that we had quite extensive interactions around this issue prior to the audit being finalized. One of the things that needed to happen before the time was that CETA, from their side, they also needed to confirm the extent of the assets. But they were not ready. This is the conversation we'll pick post now to say they will give us an update in terms of where we are, in terms of that process. But we've accepted the finding that the AG has raised, but it does also have implications for CETA, as General Skete has already alluded to, in terms of how the SLA and the BAs have been corrupted in the past, and it will require some consultation. And then equally from Treasury, in terms of them giving us the final opinion on that, it also came quite late, but we will have known, let's say, with a few times, but we probably will not have an opportunity to rectify some of the things. But if you look at, I think, note 31 on the financial statement, it seeks to clarify that position in terms of giving clarity on how we've treated the assets in relation that, on in terms of how we're then going to treat that into the future. Also to confirm that there will be certain items that we will have provided a new approach on the financials. If you look at the intangibles, note 13 in the financials, it's something that was not there in the past. It's an issue that the AG has raised during an interim audit, just to indicate that issue that they raise, we do engage with them. So where we feel they are right, we agree, and then we rectify accordingly. So intangible assets relating to software was also one of the issues that we attended to during the audit. On contingent liabilities, equally, you'll note that on note 33 and 32 of the financials, we reflect a change in approach because the one that we've used in the past, we felt that it was providing an estimate that was not realistic at the time. So we went through the process of quantification and re-quantification of the issues. So we are comfortable from the finance side that the previous issues that the AG have raised, we have resolved them satisfactorily. We are equally comfortable that the one that they've raised now, we will attend to it. For us, it was a matter of timing, and then we've already engaged with the plan now with the different, we will be meeting with CETA in the next few weeks to agree on the plan because they need to share with us what they've done because there was a lot of verification and quantification of the network assets before they can actually transfer this back to us. I think from that point, that's a bit of assurance that we can give to the committee that I don't think they will see the repeat of the issues coming forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks for that info. I think what is also quite critical and it's missing, I think one of the members mentioned it, Program 2. I think the who's going to deal with those issues in Program 2, the repeat findings?
Program 2 is Sir Mawela and Sir Mustafa.
They need to also, after the other responses, give us in detail feedback. What are they going to do? Yes, Onom Bele.
Just a very small follow-up after the explanation from General Skitter and General Ramakosi. So if I understand correctly, this was basically an issue, it was a qualitative transversal management glitch. And there was the ambiguity and the uncertainty. How do we prevent that happening again in future? Do we have a plan in future so that the SAPs in particular, but also any other, say, for example, public works, who you also have a similar relationship with, how do we prevent that kind of glitch happening again where there's suddenly a change in the usual approach and somebody's caught off guard and we can catch it before we drop the ball?
Speak of Program 2, I asked the question, where is General Masia and General Chase?
I think General
Cruz
can respond to that, but let's first get the response.
Thank you, sir. To mitigate that risk, I think you have the CFO forum, but remember, we are such a big department that a lot of the things... For the past number of years, I don't know whether we do it still, General Ramakosi, but we have been testing the template and the calculations, the linkages in the template for the Treasury before they actually roll it out every year. So we were actually the test. We took it, we populated, and then we send it back. Now, we are in an evolving, I don't want to go into technicalities, but we do have the primary financial statement, the income statement, balance sheet, cash flow statement, statement of net assets and so forth, with our primary notes. And then to bring in this accrual, and you will hear the AG also talk this morning about accrual. To bring in this accrual concept, there's constant development taking place regarding inventory that have to be brought into the financial statements, and different departments have different time frames, and so forth. So the fact of the matter is the CFO forum is one, but I will not put my last cent on the CFO forum per se, just extensive interaction, and we have had extensive interaction with the AG for the last part of the year, the last 6 months of the year, audit arrangement committee every second week, Wednesdays and so forth. So the team has really put in a lot of hard yards in order also to get the stuff out and also to work on the network aspects. But for instance now, they will, a new development, and let me be honest with you, is now that the AG says, maybe we can't pay on a PACE report anymore. PACE report is a report that you get from DPW, pay all the suppliers, and they provide you then with a PACE report, and you reimburse DPW. They say we must now go and verify every invoice. So there are developments taking place in order to move government from a total cash base, we current modified cash, to an accrual base. And constant interaction is actually the best aspect. But there's no guarantee, sir, that you might get a technical indication by the AG, and let me refer to you to a thing that we resolved, is where they say, okay, now you don't have to put in leases of buildings anymore. Because technically the lease is between the lessor and the lessee, is DPW and the landlord. And then you have to take it out. So you might get those kind of indications, but I think it's an anomaly in this regard. But constant interaction, communication, and even to a certain extent a bit of a debate sometimes, because everything is not just 1+1 in this environment. It's about how do you apply it as well. Because one of the aspects were, if we sit in a building of DPW, why should we not put the buildings on our asset register? But then they said, GIHAMA, Government Immovable Asset Management Act, is a bit of a different scenario according to their interpretation. Whether it is or not, it's not for me to express an opinion now. Because it's the same thing. It's your building, I'm using it. Why shouldn't I put it then also on my asset register if I have to use your IT asset? So it was a technical aspect. I think General McCausey explained it very good, but we will have to, I think that is maybe where we can engage with the AG beforehand to say, if you have, because they have a technical unit who interpret some of these modified cash standards and then say to the audit team, interpret it like that. Maybe to engage prior to submission or compilation of financial statements to say, are there any surprises or any different interpretations that will be forthcoming? Please tell us now and not later during an audit or whatever. So I see it as timely. That's the word I was looking for. Timely engagement with the AG per se, sir.
I see a hand there. Can we just take a 3-minute break just for members to, and if there's enough cups, just a short coffee break, 3 minutes. Just to indicate, our venue for tomorrow will be 120 Plain Street, room 1. 120 Plain Street, room 1. So it's on the parliamentary piece, and we managed to get another venue inside Parliament. So a 3-minute coffee break, and then...
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, I just want to, in terms of the process, not to elaborate on that, but just to note that the AG obtained the technical consultation memorandum on this particular issue on 22 June, and the first finding on this matter was raised on 11 July 2017. So remember, we submitted 31 May, and only during the latter part of the whole audit process a formal communication was raised with the department on this issue. Thank you, Chair.
Can I just then quickly do, I think one of the honourable members also referred to the consequence management. And this is now the consequence management in terms of the irregular expenditure, so to speak. Now, we will also elaborate on this much more on General Mokoena. If you want to come in because you are the DIFCOM there, you're more than welcome. But the procurement process, as we know, have a number of steps now which have to be complied with. Now, in the SAPS environment, it includes the following. You have a purchasing decision, I want to buy this hat. Then you need a financial authority that will reserve the funds against my budget. Then you need a procurement authority that says, to procure this hat is less than 500,000, I can go on three quotations. More than 500,000, I can go on competitive bidding. Then you get the order to be placed after that. Then you get the delivery and so forth. Most of these that they refer to is where the procurement authority was not in place before the order was issued. So the sequence was wrong, or they only gave it towards the end to say, because the procurement authority, technically speaking, is actually an approval to say, yes, your BEEE points, your way of procurement and so forth is correct. So that's the procurement authority. Now it must be transaction related. If it's not transaction related, it cannot be irregular of nature. Now, during the procurement process, we all know that the bidding process, bid evaluation committee, bid adjudication committee, is much more intense and complicated than your quotation process. Now, when the procurement of an item has been concluded and the prominent steps have not been followed, or there is doubt, potential, and that now please follow me on the screen if you so desire, sir. Process includes reporting of potential irregular expenditure by end user. I have a budget, I sit in KwaZulu-Natal, and I have now procured something, a good or an item or a service. Now, in that process, we might have misjudged, not comply with the prescript. Now, by the end user must then fill in a form with some supporting documents. With supporting documentation, it's then entered into a register as potential irregular expenditure, and then an inquiry or an investigation takes place into the alleged irregular expenditure, and then confirmed or not confirmed by the relevant authority. There are basically only two authorities in the department, the Bid Adjudication Committee and then also the accounting officer, and liability where applicable. Now, during the 2016-17 financial year, a total of 59 irregular expenditure cases were finalized. It is smaller cases, not regarded as irregular expenditure after investigation. Of the 59 was 21. Verbal warnings, which is part of our disciplinary process, were issued in 20 cases. Members sensitized, because as I think the Honorable Ramatlikani also indicated, you first try to remedy and then you start going with your severity. 3 cases. Members deceased, 1 case, and written warnings, which is a more severe one, 11 cases. So this is what was concluded in this regard in accordance with our disciplinary process. Next one, please. There were, however, 5 cases, and these are the 5 cases that the AG actually referred to. These comes from their management letter, and it was 5 aspects. Venue hiring, shooting range, Tabazimbi, SARPCO Technical Committee, subscription fees, and the Meals for Women's Network in Bizu Health in Bergveld in Ladysmith. Next one, Leon. In these instances, because of the time delay, and we're cleaning up all these potential irregulars, the time delays were of such a nature that after we received also a legal opinion, they said the sort of justice delayed scenario, you cannot now go back to a 2010 case and say in 2010, 7 years ago, you can now issue a verbal warning or whatever. But as we have indicated, I think in most of the instances, it has happened. Now, we have certain remedial actions. Circulars that were distributed, and we keep on reminding them. An annual procurement forum that was also held during the year, where all procurement officials from all provinces and divisions were briefed on how to deal with irregular expenditure. An annual supply chain management forum was held in June, where the deputy provincial commissioners and provincial heads were briefed on irregular expenditure as follows. They were reminded to adhere to the latest guidelines from the National Treasury, divisions and provinces to ensure that irregular expenditure registers are kept in order to record incidents. Divisions and provinces were required to prepare action plans to prevent irregular expenditure, and there's a number of interventions that one can follow in this regard. Next one, Leon. Another annual procurement forum will take place within a few days, 18 October, where all procurement officials from all province divisions will again be briefed on how to deal with possible irregular expenditure. An electronic version of the guidelines are available on the intranet, and then also a pocket guide. I would just like to also reflect, these were not where the BAC recommended a warning, verbal, writing, remedial action. Those were only concluded once the end user, for instance, the example I used like KwaZulu-Natal, instituted and concluded on that. Then they report back and say it has been done, and because it has been done, then the case is concluded. So those were not recommendations. They were physically performed as such. Now, obviously, if it moves into higher order, because they were mainly quotations of nature, where the procurement authority was not provided prior to the order being issued, obviously, then there's also, and I have it here with me, also the guideline of the National Treasury says you have to take the nature of the transgression, the nature of the amount, and so forth into account as you move up into your disciplinary process and the application thereof. This is in terms of the four cases that the AG referred to, on which basically the report is based in this regard, sir. I think I have referred now to two, General Cruz, Chairperson. I think the next one is a 2.7 billion with General Mokwena, but you are the chair, you are the acting, sir, please.
General Mokwena will.
That was the capital, that's the police buildings.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members, Chair and honorable members. I think the honorable Kola Barnard spoke of the 874 million that was allocated to capital works in the previous financial year. Now, out of that 874, the amount that was spent, which was 91%, is 795 for capital works projects. 9%, which constitutes 76 million, has already been spent on these financial years. Now, if I may give an example, like for example, where we come up with interventions where capital projects were not met because of poor performance by service providers. We normally come up with intervention measures like Tabazimbi, where we spend a large amount of money for capital works projects. Now, when coming to the 2016-17, again, financial year, for all the projects under the following categories, for example, the construction site clearance, we had six of them, and I think it's worth mentioning that site clearance takes about 18 months. Some they are about to be finished, and some the progress is still continuing. Now, under the planning and design for 16 and 17, we had eight, of which, again, some of them, they are about to be completed. Some will be completed from the end of this month and November. Then the last one is construction and execution for last year. We had six projects, all of them for that particular financial year. Already this year, we opened two, one in the Eastern Cape, one in Limpopo, this previous month. Two police station, big ones, have been opened. And then I think during this month we'll open one, if I'm not mistaken, but I'll get the details of that. But all what I'm indicating, Chair and honorable members, is that the money that was allocated for capital works has been spent accordingly and in terms of the project. Thanks, Chair.
Can I just add that currently we have 3,140 state-owned facilities and 1,203 leased facilities, and the monies that are in the VSPOL environment are for those municipal services, leases, as well as accommodation charges and capital works under Program 1, Honourable Members.
Shall we ask Gwyneth to deal with the HRM issues?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. In terms of members who were doing business with the SAPS, the question that was raised by the Honourable Gola Barnett, I will first deal with the regulatory framework. I will be talking to specific cases which were in the Auditor General's report. The involvement of members in business is regulated within the SAPS by the National Instruction 4 of 2012, which provides that members will have to apply for additional remuneration. An approval thereof will be granted within 30 days. Secondly, prior to August 2016, it was never an offence for members of the SAPS to be involved in business with government, and that will include the SAPS. In February 2016, the DPSA gave direction in terms of transitional arrangements which had to be dealt with in anticipation of the Public Administration Management Act, which was implemented in August 2016. The transitional arrangement meant that members were required to, within 6 months, resign from being directors of companies where they would have been involved in business with government. And as the organization, we issued a circular, a directive that indicated what is expected of members to do prior to the implementation of the Act, which came into effect in August 2016. All that was expected of us was to make an application for additional remunerative work. Now, what was happening then is that if a member is involved in business, the member will then declare conflict. You will not sit in a panel where there is there is adjudication of such business. And if there is maybe a spouse that is involved, you will then expect it to declare interest. But after the implementation of the Public Administration Management Act in August 2016, members of the SAPS are now forbidden from being involved in business with government, including the SAPS. Now, in 2015-2016, the AG came up with the AG's report made visible a total of 32 members who were involved in business with the SAPS. The process which we follow after receiving the report from the Auditor General, we subject information for verification, and then we also check as to whether the member applied to be involved in remunerative work. And then we also check as to whether this member would have disclosed during the financial disclosure process. And then we do the forensic audit, which is conducted by our internal audit. And also, now with the integrity unit, they do the lifestyle audit. Then what happened with this particular 32 members after we have conducted the investigation is, in terms of the 19 members, actually it was 32 in terms of the Auditor General's report, but then one of the names were a duplication, and then it left us with 31, which I will be talking to. In terms of the 19 members, which list, General, I'll request that the list you. In terms of the 31 members, the 19 employees, there were no disciplinary action taken, as the employees were not in contravention of any of the prescripts, and we do have a list. I can cite an example. There was one of them, number one on the list. It was personnel officer Mahlelehlele MC. The company was Lobuswa Trading, and the amount that was found to be paid was 116,514 rand. And then the member worked within the forensic services environment. As to whether the member applied for additional remuneration, yes, the member did apply for additional remuneration. And then in terms of the forensic audit that was concluded, according to the CIPC documents provided as well as confirmation by the internal audit, forensic audit, the employee has resigned from company as a director on 2015-9-14. Although the employee has resigned from the company, a disciplinary investigation needed to be concluded against the employee for failing to obtain permission for remunerative work. That was the forensic audit. But then, when personnel management perused the file, when they perused the file, we found that the member had applied. Hence, we indicated that there were no steps taken. This member resigned as the director of the company, and when we checked as to whether he did apply for remuneration work, there was an application that was approved in the member's file. And there was further a lifestyle audit that of conflict of interest that was done by the integrity unit. In terms of that report, it says, in terms of the CIPC database, the company is still active, although the employee has resigned from the company. A lifestyle audit by the department with regard to possible conflict of interest was initiated, and the following was established. Employee was found to be linked to Mzwini Trading Cooperative Limited with registration so-and-so. Which company is active? The employee is reflected as having resigned from Lobuswa Trading. The employee holds 3 First National Bank accounts and 1 Post Bank account. Lobuswa Trading holds a bank account with First National Bank. The business Lobuswa Trading Limited conducted business in the Eastern Cape Department of Rural Development and received a total of 50,080 into their FNB bank account. The company continued to conduct business in the Eastern Cape government as further payments of 48,000 to them are reflected after a tax year. And then in terms of the column that says whether the member was granted permission, a continuation thereof, employee was appointed in the service on 2014-12-01 and applied for remunerative work on 2015-3-09 for 2015-16 financial year and was granted. It was later withdrawn on 2015-03-27 by the provincial head forensic services after discovery that he is doing business with SAPS. He resigned from the business on the 2015-9-14. Therefore, he cannot be charged as he never did business with SAPS in the said financial year. Then there were documents which were attached as evidence of the forensic investigation that was conducted by the internal audit. I do have the whole list of the 31 with an explanation to each. And then for the 16-17 financial year, there were 10 members mentioned in the report. In terms of three of those members, internal audit is still busy with the forensic investigation. This is the annual report under discussion. Internal audit is busy with 3 forensic audit, and then in terms of the disciplinary action, 4 of the members, it was not necessary to take disciplinary steps against members. And I'll give an example of a member who is listed as number 3S and Mugwena. The company is Mugwena Investments. The investigation was finalized. No disciplinary action taken because the company did not transact with SAPS. That was the outcome of that investigation. Another example, number 6, HM Gumede. The company is Ndu Trading Enterprise. The investigation was finalized. No disciplinary action taken. Company was fraudulently used. The members' personal particulars were fraudulently used to obtain a NetBank loan. The bank finalized an investigation and confirmed that the employee did not benefit from the company. Criminal and civil litigation was instituted by the bank against the company. I don't know as to whether I can go through the...
No, I think maybe the 1st of November, because that discussion we're going to have with the action steps, we can maybe get the full list for further reference, yes.
Okay, but then...
Honourable Bailey, follow up on your response, General, just a moment.
Yes, Chair, just it's a small comment. Thank you very much to the General for that explanation. I hear the explanation, and the purely logical part of me wants to accept that, but another part of me is still very uneasy, because if I think about the bigger picture, and the bigger picture in this environment is that we're trying to drive for the professionalization of the police service, and that speaks to a certain qualitative, ethical quality in police officers. You know, people shouldn't have to be getting off on technicalities where the company didn't get a contract in the same year that the person was a director. It should just be, it shouldn't even be an issue. It shouldn't come up on the radar. If you become a police officer, you become, there's just that expectation. Maybe I'm too idealistic, I don't know. But it makes me feel uneasy that we have to be willing to let people slip and slide out of accountability on technicalities around when they resigned. And, you know, the case about the company being fraudulently used, I understand that. But I think there's just a deeper aspect to all of this that that needs to be tackled head on around. We want to professionalize the police service. We want them to be unambiguously and completely dedicated to fulfilling that mandate. And we haven't got time for these side distractions around directorships and companies, and this company is doing business but not with this department, so it's fine. It's just it's too messy, and I don't think it's where we need to be.
I mean, if I listened to the General and I saw the irregular expenditure approach, we need the uniform approach. There should be no prisoners taken. I mean, SAPS must be strict. They must ensure that the letter of the legislation are followed through, and because otherwise we're not going to have consequence management, because the first, of course, if there's good reasons and legal reasons that matters shouldn't proceed, it's fine. But I mean, the big thing is we need consequence management. And on your own admission, that first line is currently not holding. We need that.
I think we should now raise even the point, General Mugwena. You asked me to maybe make the point as well. That when we move to family members, it even becomes more difficult. Let's take a hypothetical example. If it was your brother that provided the food outside because he has a business somewhere in town, surely you cannot be held responsible. And what should you declare? I'm just putting one curveball in the road. Another thing, we've got a world-class profiler. So we say to him, you do not give class at UNISA anymore. It's a government institution. There are difficult aspects. We fully agree with the consequence management. I think we do. Enhancing it in SCM as well, but there are difficulties. But from February, no business with the state anymore, especially when that PAMA, Public Administration Management Act, it's already been approved, but when once it kicks in. But there are difficulties once we move to family members, your direct family member.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. We have got measures to improve compliance, which talks to professionalism. I indicated earlier that we issued out a national circular addressing the transitional arrangement. Now members are aware that they cannot involve themselves in business with government. And then we also came up with a dedicated integrity management service, which has been established effective from November 2016. And amongst others, they deal with conflict of interest management, financial disclosure, maintains a register on declared interest, remuneration, remunerative work applications, integrity assessments, declaration of interest register, manage receipt of gifts, a gift register, and declaration, but also issues of ethics management and investigations, which amongst others deals with the issue raised by the Honorable Mr. Mbele. We also conducted 24 preliminary investigations related to conflict of interest and ethical breaches. We implemented advocacy and awareness programs related to ethics, integrity, anti-corruption, code of conduct, ethics, anti-corruption, integrity at work, ethical leadership. And then we also in the process of reviewing the anti-corruption strategy and related policies. We also came up with an annual electric database analysis of CIPC, which will assist us to identify sub-officials involved with business with government or registered on the central supplier database. All SAPS members will also be required to sign a certificate in the form of a sworn statement to clarify their status in terms of the remunerative work outside the SAPS, because the current situation is dependent solely on members being honest to say, I am applying, I am involved in remunerative work. Also, submission of electronic financial disclosures by middle management as well as all functionaries attached to supply chain management and financial management with effect from 1st June 2017. And then I won't continue talking to supply chain management because General Skete has already spoken to that. Those are some of the measures which we are implementing to curb the what went into the Auditor General's report regarding issues of members involved. There was also a question raised regarding fraud and corruption. In respect of an allegation where member would have aided escapes, these cases, the alleged fraud and corruption are dealt with in terms of the discipline regulations, where there will be an investigation conducted. And emanating from the outcome of the investigation, steps will then be taken. If it's a disciplinary process that will have to be followed, the outcome of the disciplinary process will be informed by the merit of the case. And then there was an issue raised by Honorable Mbele regarding slide 34, the discrepancies between the figures of the IPIT and the figures of the SAPS. As the SAPS and the IPIT, we have got an arrangement. We have got monthly meetings at both provincial level and national level, where officials from the SAPS and those from the IPIT that are custodians of this information meet to compare information. So we do not know what would have led to the discrepancies, and at no time did we ever have a situation where IPIT would have raised an issue regarding our information. But other than that, on a quarterly basis, we forward reports regarding progress made in implementing the recommendations of the IPIT. We forward a report to the Secretariat of Police, to IPIT, the Executive Director, and also to the Minister, where we will be making visible the number of recommendations received, those finalized, and status in terms of those not finalized. Again, at no time did we ever get any information where there would have been a discrepancy picked up by our colleagues. Then there was also an issue regarding the remaining 32 cases on slide 34. If we look at page 46 of the annual report, there is a footnote. Those remaining cases in terms of that slide,
as at the end of the financial year, those cases were still within the time frames. Hence, we could not report on them. They were carried over to this financial year. Hence, that the footnote that explains in line with the technical indication description. Slide 35, the 911 recommendations, of which 737 was finalized. 41 were matters which were still under investigation, and they would have been still within the time frames. And then 102 were pending decisions to initiate the hearings, decisions which would have been have to be taken at the provincial level and divisional level. So the 102 which could not be finalized at the time were still subject to the finalization of the decisions. And then 31 cases, the disciplinary process was still underway when during the end of the financial year. If we add 737 plus 41, 102 plus 102 plus 31, it amounts to 911. And then the issue that was raised by the honor by Honorable Mhlongo regarding service terminations, I'm not in a position to talk to the specific case that was raised. However, when it comes to service terminations, honorable members will recall when we came up with the recovery plan in November 2015, we had a total of 7,199 cases, which reflected as a backlog. And our performance during 2015-16, where the target was 95%, which had to be finalized within 60 days, our achievement at the time was 36.19%. Now, in terms of that backlog of 7,199, where we are now as the organization, we are at 1,300 general NC, I will remind me. But the, dealing with the backlog did not mean that the incoming service terminations were not dealt with. We were dealing with the backlog, simultaneously dealing with the incoming service terminations. And in terms of our performance in 2016-2017, we achieved 55.48 of the cases, and where we are as at where we were as at the end of August in this year, we are now at 83%. It indicates that our recovery plan is working for us, and the picture has changed. We believe we will also do better as time goes on with the intervention measures which we have indicated earlier. The issue on the consistency that was raised by Honorable Mulebatse, the issue of inconsistency regarding the disciplinary cases against members. Can be able to say here is that every case is dealt with by functionaries in terms of merits. Then at our level, it becomes difficult to say, why in this case would a member be given a final written warning? But also, I must say, our discipline regulations are very much clear as to what needs to happen when members' transactions will be of a very serious nature. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
General Sally Khan will deal with the issues of civil claims. Marikana.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable members, in response to the question raised by the Honorable Diane Kola Barnard,
It's in relation to Marikana incident and whether it is reflected in the contingent liability. I'll respond to that and thereafter talk to the contingencies as far as civil claims is concerned. I will start off by just summarizing the claims themselves on Marikana. The total of claims that we received, summonses served, was 653. That means we have 653 plaintiffs in the matter. The amount claimed was 1,170,946,235 rands. This is in respect of injuries as a result of the shooting, claims to loss of support, minus families wounded, assault, arrest and detention and malicious prosecution, and injuries as a result of assault, arrest and detention. A total of 653 as I've indicated. The current status as far as the claims are concerned, 37 deceased minors with various numbers of dependents as plaintiffs. Of the 37, 32 of the deceased minors' dependents' loss of support claims have been submitted to an actuarial at this point in time, obviously with a view to settlement. The four plaintiffs' supporting documents are still outstanding for submission to an actuarial. The one has already been settled, that is in respect of one deceased, Leding Wana, with seven lawful dependents, an amount of 3,995,121 rand was paid on the 30th of June this year. Other offers have been made of between 50,000 to 100,000 for arrest and detention. Obviously, it depends on the number of days that they allege that they were detained for. Some of the offers were rejected, and we've asked for proof of detention to consider settlement. The minister has granted authorization to settle claims within the 20, where we're asking for settlement, 20,000 rand per day per plaintiff. So we've submitted 275 plaintiff's claims to state attorney to make offers to the plaintiffs. And lastly, in respect of the assault, we await expert documents for assault from plaintiffs, and they've made an undertaking that such will be made available by the end of November of this year. That's as far as Marikana is concerned. Yes, the amount is contained, forms part of the contingent liabilities as far back as 2014. Chair, may I also talk to the issue of the contingent liabilities? Thank you. As far as contingent liabilities are concerned, obviously the increase is a great concern for the department, and it has, as known, far-reaching implications for the department. And the incidents giving rise to civil claims, the unlawful arrest, detention, assault, shooting incidents, and so forth. What I must indicate at this point in time is that in the year of reporting, 2016-2017 financial year, there's actually been a decrease in the number of incidents of civil claims reported. We had 15,837 in comparison to 2015-2016, which was 16,498. But obviously the contingencies are still very high. So the contingency amounts are increasing, but the number of incidents have decreased. This may be as a result of the interventions that have been undertaken so far, which I would be alluding to as I go on. Chair,
Chair, if I may, while we're still on the point of civil claims, I'd like to repeat a question I'd asked earlier on this year, if I'm not mistaken, and at the time I think I directed it to General Jafta, and it's about a way of strengthening the accountability that flows from this whole civil claims and environment. Is there any reason, statutory or otherwise, why SAPS management cannot figure out a system whereby you partially pass on the financial cost of these liabilities to directly to the offending officers? If an offending officer has been proven to have a direct link to causing a civil liability, seeing 500, 700 rand docked off their pay for 6 months is going to teach a lesson and hit them in the pockets. And it also lets people know, you know, kind of spreads it out the culture that you can't just, you know, commit the offense, but the organization will carry the cost of it. No, it also hits you in the pockets. Is there any reason that we can't look at doing that?
Billy, Jingle, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Yes, I will respond to Honorable Mbele's concerns as we go on. Maybe I should start with that and say it's actually a matter that is receiving attention. It's contained in the management intervention project that has started now in the 2016-2017 financial year, the first part of the project, and it's going on to the second part, which I would talk to. But it comes back to consequential management. What I must indicate at this point in time is that although there are interventions underway, we've not had a situation where we've recovered from members that have been held accountable. Honorable Chair, I just want to talk to the issue of the amount of 50 billion, if I might bring it to a round figure.
Honorable Khurubal, follow up, Chair, on that same issue.
Honorable Lakhani, yes.
May I ask, say for instance in an unlawful arrest, you say no consequences, but don't you go back to the specific member who did the unlawful arrest and find out what happened or something like that? Or is it a matter, yes, we received the civil claims, the legal department deals with that, and that's that. What steps are being taken back to the members involved in this? And I think that is what my honourable colleague is asking here. What measures are they taking back to the members?
Just a moment, Honourable Robert Lekane, then Honourable Kala Barnard on the same issue. Thank you.
Mine is not on the same issue. It was on the General Mukwena's point. So, when General Mukwena mentioned that the clearing of site takes 18 months, I was caught by that statement. So I did want to get more clarity. If he wants to explain to me after this meeting, please do. But I just want to understand where is this regulated? What authority of this 18 months is? Where does it get it from? Or is it the business relations that determine it? Because I'm just thinking, if you're a business person, you want to get into this business, and you want to clear a site, it takes you 2 years to clear a site for construction, something is wrong somewhere. If you can explain that thing.
You need a response now or after?
Yeah, well, maybe after the general. Okay. We'll give him an opportunity. Honorable Kala Barnard on the same issue, the claims set.
Yeah, I thank you. In reference to the Marikana issue, do you have an end date? When do you think it will finally be wrapped up? I'm thinking, and I know how long, for example, the Mido Masia. Okay, the Mido Masia case, where he was dragged behind the van and then beaten to death in the cells. You know, his wife and his little boy were almost starving to death. I used to phone them regularly, and I don't even still today know if they've ever received a cent. This is before Marikana. So, do you envisage a final date when you can say the Marikana issue has been, everyone has been paid, we can now move on with a clean slate, and have you dealt with the Mido Masia case? Thank you.
Thank you, members. Let's get those responses.
Honourable Chair, on the issue of whether we've dealt with the Mido Masia case, I do not know. I need to get that information at this point in time. But on the issue of Marikana, we do not have a date, but the approach is being conciliatory, as we all know.
And in the event that the parties accept the settlements that are being made to them, then we would be able to reach finality soon. I think the one aspect that is being defended at this point in time is the issue of the assaults, the assault allegations or the assault claims. But I think we would reach a stage where we're making settlements to them and we would be able to finalize it. But at this point in time, I cannot give a date. But the process is conciliatory, not defending and not litigating.
Thank you.
Other
responses? Thank you. Because you must still come to program.
Yeah, we're going to do that last. We're going to do all other things first.
So they're busy with the action plans?
Yeah. Department.
General Cruiser?
My question was quite simple. In a case of, for instance, an unlawful arrest, what steps are being taken against that specific member who was involved in that unlawful arrest?
In respect of unlawful arrest, if we have a civil claim, the matter is being investigated. We do not immediately settle, Honourable Chair. In the event that a member is found wanting in terms of having performed his functions in an improper manner of neglect or whatever, then the matter is investigated. But to be able to indicate whether any member has been held accountable at this point in time, I do not have numbers nor figures as far as that is concerned. But in terms of the question of contingent liabilities, why is it so high, I think I need to mention that a lot of interventions have been undertaken so far. I've mentioned the civil claims project, but if time allows me, I would continue, but it seems like time is not on my side. May I?
Yes. 18 months. The 18 months.
Okay, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members. The first step that has to be taken when you're clearing up a site is the zoning of the area. In some areas, the site is not yet zoned. Whether you can build a police station there or is it a business site, it's one example. Now, the Department of Land Affairs has to be consulted, including community consultation, where you find that communities don't agree from the onset. So you need to convince them that you need this police station. Some will tell you want it here, the other one will tell it no, on not this side, on the other side. The municipal bylaws, geotechnical surveys, like is the soil suitable to construct a building, is there any water there in case of deep rural areas, will there be water, sinkhole, you know, there are a number of factors. And on average, that takes 18 months. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I think you're lucky we do it in 18 months. That's the quickest normally. With the environmental affairs, it's very difficult to get it through there. General Makosi and General Nelson on the Department of the Receipts.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the departmental receipts, the sales of capital assets, after 89 million, about 88.9 million of that is in respect of the sale of capital assets in respect of motor vehicles. And then there's a small remainder part for cell phones and other machinery and equipment. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, can I request before Chairman Well and his team that we just take you through the process we've decided which they will come up with the plans. Where we've started with the accountability sessions, we're going to all the provinces, and how we're going to come to the detail of what is going to be said. So that's the process we're going to be busy with now to come to the exact details of how we're going to come to the allow us. I think it's been a 2-3 pages presentation.
Do the roadmap of November?
Yeah.
If you can do it in 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Honorable Chair, you're not going into the detail. Basically, what has already been presented, since we identified the problems that I've earlier referred to, And there was an accounting session last week where we dealt with all the locations where audit findings were made from provincial cluster and station level to do a proper root cause analysis to, first of all, determine why these things were happening, but also at the same time to deal with the accounting and also the consequence management that flows out of that. So that happened last week, and as already indicated, the instruction from the acting national commissioner at the time, Joel Kruiser, was that all the incidents need to be investigated, and we have to get feedback in terms of consequence management as far as that is concerned. The second step is we are now in process to develop a proper plan that I believe you referred to that we will have to present in 1st of November, going into the detail exactly how we're going to deal with everything that is associated with the AGSA plan. And then we will have a pre-planning session. We scheduled a pre-planning session with the Auditor General on the 16th of October, where we're going to get all our national and provincial nodal points to have a full day session with the Auditor General to take us through the processes so that people understand how the audits work, what the methodology is going to be that they apply, and what they're going to focus on if available at the time, and so that we can gear our nodal points to run or to facilitate the audit process. From Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, Chair, we are visiting all 9 provinces to engage with provincial cluster and station management on the annual performance plan of the South African Police Service, what the data requirements are, what the internal controls are, what they need to focus on to brief them on all the possible audit sites, on how the audit will be conducted, what they need to focus on, and what we will, for instance, provide them with all the current internal controls that relates to specific indicators. So if you look at something like absenteeism, we will provide from station, cluster, and provincial management with all the current controls to explain to them what the requirements are and how they need to implement that processes to make sure that when the audits start that our data meets the requirement that has been set. I've also referred to, Jay, we are currently developing a combined assurance database where we look at all the audit findings, all the recommendations from all assurance bodies that is relevant to SAPS. And our intention is to have that database ready by the end of the month to do a detailed analysis of all the assurance problems that we have in SAPS in terms of compliance and good governance. Because the intention is not, we cannot only focus on what the AGSA is doing. We need to focus on everybody else as well. We need to look at the recommendations, for instance, that are made by the Portfolio Committee. We need to look at recommendations made by DPME, by all oversight bodies. And then, Chair, we also started with a process, that's the second last slide here. We've initiated the development of an integrated M&E system for SAPS, where we built in, I will present the detail on the 1st of November, or if I have the time tomorrow, we can possibly look at that. We are building a system, currently developing a system that will be the first in government, in broader government, that will allow us to properly capture information from all our source systems and have verification capturing from the lowest level where people will have direct access to internal controls. There will be compliance checks for every single indicator. There will be compliance checks from the lowest level and certification on a continuous basis to see if we can use that mechanism to improve the accuracy and the completeness of our data. I think that is a little bit more than 3 minutes, yes.
No, I think we have this. We have this.
Chair, thanks. Chair, I think the other principle we took in the meeting last week, the accounting session, is that we want to move away from the employee to the managers. That if something has happened at the station and it's not been fixed by the station commissioner, station commissioner must now be held accountable. If the station commissioner hasn't done that, then the cluster commission must tell us why he has not taken steps against the station commission. And likewise, so we want to take accountability to management level itself. Because we keep on focusing on the individual who hasn't done the thing. But there's managers and supervisors, so part of what we are doing is to deal with this issue itself. The last thing I want to say...
Sorry, Chief. Can I just ask? It sounds very good. The station must take the responsibility. At has always been like that. So may I ask, when has it been changed that they don't take the responsibility?
Chair, they've always been responsible, but we've always been focused. If someone doesn't have a pocketbook, we focus on the constable who doesn't have a pocketbook. So we are saying if the station commissioner has not taken action against that person who didn't complete his pocketbook or lost, we must now start charging the station commissioner for negligence itself. It's something I don't think we pay too much attention. We always focus on the employees at the bottom, but we want to now focus on management to ensure that they ensure compliance at the station. So that's the change of emphasis we want to bring in the session we had itself. The other thing is that in terms of our research agenda, priority area 7, inculcating a culture of compliance in South African police systems. Based on the last report of the AG, we have put that in our research agenda, and General Zulu is quite far down the line, so that will also assist us in come up with solutions to dealing with the issue of non-compliance. Thanks.
Can we go to program 2?
Yeah.
Thank you, General Cruiser. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, thank you very much for the opportunity. Firstly, to respond on the question raised by Honorable Mulebazi as to where's General Masia. Yes, General Masia, she's on her annual leave. It was pre-planned previously and rescheduled due to service delivery demands. And she has already committed the resources with her family that they will be going elsewhere. And taking into consideration that this from next month will be concentrating on the festive season operation, so we felt that we can't postpone it further. Let's allow her to go, and then we will benefit her return when she comes back next week. Coming to the issue of all the findings against the visible policing program by the AGSA, General Mutlala will give the details, but however, during the accounting session which we held last week, we also tested whether all the prescripts and directives issued by the division visible policing, does it make sense? Whether the people at grassroots level, do they understand it? When they develop the action plan, do the people understand those things? And among the others, we were asking the station commanders to can explain to us, when divisional visible, they say we have developed this action step, we ask the station command, do you know, do you understand the action steps? So some they did, some they did not understand. But here we have station commander of Cape Town Central, who amongst the others explained to the meeting how she is implementing those mitigating measures, and of which we feel that it is one of the best practices. If you allow, Honorable Chairperson, if we can ask her to explain what measures have she implemented based on the directive received from the division. Brigadier?
There's a lot of politicians visiting your station for complaints, so please go ahead.
Honorable Chairperson and members, I'm just going to go ahead and explain what was the finding. The finding was concerning the weight of drugs that was not captured correctly on the SAP 13, as well as on the operational planning and monitoring system. We've taken the national instruction. There was one of the samples from Cape Town Central that was featuring on the report. And overall, that was a finding that was picked up, that the weight was not correctly captured. And liquor was not correctly put on in terms of milliliters. There has been derelict of duty in respect of what was done. However, in terms of what we put in place is that we implemented the National Instruction 8 of 2017, which reads in simple language, we actually make sure that from the level of confiscation in the CSC to the recording in the SAP 13, that is properly captured in terms of the weight, that it's properly weighed, the weight put into the SAP 13, and the monitoring tools that we have in place is that the relief commander ensures that it's properly done. We have the SAP 594, which is a control document in terms of productivity, where the drug weight is actually put on this document. Then a further check is done when it is handed over to the SAP 13 clerk. We also appointed individuals
in terms of OPAM capturing, so that the system that reflects what comes out in terms of successes correlates with the figure that is put in the SAP 13. And by then it reaches the stage of capturing. There's been various verifications done on the different levels. Then we have a weekly, a daily monitoring tool, which we have a copy of the SAP 13 with a document attached to it, practically the 594, as well as the checks and balances that has been put in place. That is filed on the station level when there is an audit or inspection, that you can actually see what figures on the 13 as well as that. Further than that, we have a weekly document which entails all drugs and liquor that is confiscated on that document. That is also done, as well as then we have our monthly document. As shortly as this, when we find the identified problems, it should not reach the stage of capturing that we actually find that there is a problem. Before it reaches that stage, there should be verification and checks. And that will entail serious disciplinary actions taken against individuals who failed to manage that step. As an accounting officer and the station commander, I'm held accountable. So it was pointed out clearly in the national meeting that verbal and written is not going to cut it for this kind of repeat findings. That's from my side. Thank you.
Mawela, I just want to know, is this now a case study? Is it going to be rolled out to the rest of the country? I just want to get a sense.
Exactly. Honorable Chairperson, during our roadshow, we are going to ensure that we engage all station commanders, because what we have also observed is that this repeat repeat findings, it doesn't literally happen at the same station. So the Auditor General may decide to go to another station and only to find that that station management, they are not ready, they don't know what is expected from them. So with this roadshow, we take everybody on board, and then we deal with everybody. And then moving forward, we know that we are at the same level, common understanding, and we account, we speak, and we sing from one hymn book. So this approach, I think it's going to help us that we alleviate to come back here and then with the qualified report as we are right now.
Honorable Colonel Barnett, but I mean the issue of general, the issue of pocketbooks, for example, is that included in the PAC?
Chair, all the findings, 42 of them, we have developed, we set with every station commissioner who was in this finding, and we made it very clear. The verbal and written warnings which has been going on, because those things go in, they make no effect on these things. So the next commissioner, the acting, when he comes back tomorrow, will go on a roadshow with his team and implement what we decided in that meeting itself.
Thank you, Chair. Look, I understand one station now has implemented these systems that should deal with the drugs that are brought in, the liquor that's brought in, indeed the firearms that are brought in. But you can't tell me that these enormous amounts, 313 milliliters, or liters, 313 million liters of alcohol missing from the reporting. No, I'm sorry. That wasn't an error. That is a figure from the Auditor General. 313 million liters. Well, it's more like 314. So where is that? And secondly, you've got 71 million kilograms of drugs missing, says the Auditor General. Now, where are they? Did someone sell them? Is someone opening shops and selling evidence? Where is it gone? And, of course, the firearms, the Auditor General says that actually you got back 10,000 fewer than you claimed. So I just fail to understand why it is you have to do a roadshow to tell people you have made station commanders. I presume they're untrained, untried, junior, what's that, know nothing. But you now have to take a roadshow around the country to tell them how to write down and weigh drugs and enter it in books and things. Who on earth are you appointing as station commanders that they don't actually know this already? It's a crying shame.
Listen, you know, last year we had a lengthy discussion on this thing of pocketbooks. It's so disappointing to see us talking again about pocketbooks after having had such a lengthy discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. General Mohlala will go into details as to what the other measures that we put in place to address those, and also to give some explanation about issues of firearms, whereby we received 17,000 and then only 5,000 could be accounted for. Among the others, the directive we have given to the provincial commissioners is that criminal cases have to be registered, and during the roadshow, we'd like to get those case numbers of cases registered, because in the report, we've also discovered that some of the firearms which are not in our storerooms were cancelled on the systems. So with that, there's nothing we can do about it other than to institute a criminal investigation, go to the bottom of it, find out who cancelled those firearms, what are the reasons behind that, and then we deal with that particular individual. And again, we've also observed, because of they were just reporting randomly, that with regard to this matter, we have given the member a verbal warning and so forth. We have also wanted to can get more details, because of if an action have resulted in us having a qualified report, it means that it's serious. It doesn't warrant a verbal warning. So during that roadshow, these are some of the evidence we are going to collect, so that when we come back during November, we come with those evidence. The issue of liquor, General Mshala will also go into the details, because of the issue, the directive. Station commanders, they were saying that at times it's so difficult for them to can determine the volume of liquor, if it is open and so forth. So there is measures in place and directive to say that how must they estimate the volumes around that. Through you, Chairperson, if I can allow General Mohlala to can give us.
Chair, can I just ask for clarity on that last point? If the General can just say it again, that there was difficulty in assessing the volume of liquor if the container was open. Is that what I heard? Is this like bottles or...
Chair, the challenge is if a bottle is open, it's not half, it's not three quarters, somewhere in between. So you have a 750 milliliters. So they try to calculate. And actually, if I read the AG's report and when they had discussions, they seem to think we actually confiscated more liquor than what we recorded. So we actually under-reported on it, not over-reported on the liquor issue. We have changed the OPAM now to deal with the problem. We're going to have quarter bottles, half, three quarter, so that people can just use those figures to get a round figure around these issues itself. So in the system, they will then work on those sort of figures, either quarter bottle or half a bottle or three quarter bottle, so that our figures can be more balanced. It's very different, because once we want to get them to take it out and measure it, the problem will become even bigger, because that was some of the suggestions. So we're now going to make it easy for them to look at the bottle. If it's closer to half, we'll say half. If it's closer to quarter, you say quarter. So that the findings can be more accurate in terms of going forward. Thanks, Chair.
Maybe just, the issue of firearms, because this is very serious. I mean, we had the one member of Guguletu last week, member of the stabilization unit, with two employees of a certain franchise, who was involved in a robbery and was arrested by members of SAPS in Cape Town. He booked out his R5 and took it home. Now, again, the controls issue. The station commander and the relief commander. I mean, are you going to review those measures? Because it's clearly not working. If a person can book out the R5 to take home without an operation going on, I mean, the risks, I mean, I'm not even talking about the current situation in this province. I mean, can we get assurance as a committee that you're going to review it?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Definitely we are going to review that, because we have observed that these members, they can move from one station to another and book firearms here and go and book firearms there. So we'll ensure that firearms are booked in a central place. They cannot be issued with firearms elsewhere. And then even when they report off duty, if they have to hand back the firearms, they have to hand them back where they have booked them out. So those measures are going to be reviewed, and we'll ensure that we put tighter control measures around that.
General Mawela, did I hear you correctly when you say these officers, they can leave from this police station and go to another one and book a firearm, and maybe even go to another one and maybe book, even cook, can even book five police stations? Is that what they're saying?
Honorable Ramalakani, we will come.
I wanted to make follow up on that, whether that was a correct statement, because then you have a problem in your hand if that's how the control of firearm happens. Now, I thought that there's a shift system, and there's a booking of firearm at a particular time, and the particular time when you go home, you hand back your firearm. Now, you're saying a person can book at this station on shift and simultaneously be on shift at another station to book a firearm. How does that work? Then second thing I wanted to, in your report you mentioned something like firearms that were, the serial number that were rubbed off, that were tampered with or got missing. Maybe you can also explain that. In your presentation there was something like that which I made a note of in terms of firearm, that something is not telling.
Bele, you the next one on this issue? Yes.
Thanks, Chair. It's a question on a different dimension of the same issue, but it also relates to the SCM environments. Are the systems that we use to manage these processes, are they electronic? Or is this all a paper-based system? Because if it's electronic, for example, because I heard the general say something about how somebody can cancel a firearm on the database. Now, it's very easy to set up an electronic database with levels of authorization, double-checking, cross-checking, in the same way that, you know, many companies, you can only authorize a transaction when 2 out of 3 authorized people have done their authorization. So, I mean, if these are electronic in the first place, then, and it's that simple to set up the checks and balances, I really, really struggle to understand why we're having such difficulty here. Maybe there's a problem in the initial specs design of the process, but just some clarity around that, Chair. Because even something as simple as, you know, a box should pop up and say, are you sure you want to authorize this? And then a message goes to the station commander so they can review it later on. You know, something like that.
Thank you. General Mawela, you're welcome.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Let me explain this issue of booking a firearm from this station and so forth. The normal procedure is that I will book a firearm where I'm stationed, where I'm based. But the question which I was responding to is a particular member who's attached to this stability intervention group. So it's like people, a task team put together whereby they are responsible to do certain things. In this one, this particular member, because of their working at this cluster, they move, they go, that's depending on where there is a problem. So we have observed the gap that they should not be allowed to can book the firearms where they are not based. So that it doesn't mean that it's a normal process whereby a member can book a firearm anywhere. So this one, because of they are a special group put together, and then this particular member who was identified he happened to move around. Yes.
Which then means there are a lot of firearms that are unaccounted for. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, as we're talking a little more generally, tell me that the fingerprint, et cetera, database is now a national one. In other words, I've heard endless tales of police officers drawing a firearm, getting into civvies, driving to another province, committing a crime, and even if they're caught and their fingerprints taken and they're let out on bail, the fingerprints never come back to the original province. There's no tracing of the firearm. They go back to their province, put on their uniform, and carry on their day. Are these systems, I mean, we've been hearing about an integrated system since, when Gary had hair then. I just want to know, are we at a stage where we can trust the systems, or are we still, as my colleague was saying, dealing with little bits of paper?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to ask, it doesn't make sense that the booking of the firearm, because, I mean, there's a person responsible for the firearm safe. Now, can I just get an explanation that if some member comes and takes a firearm, it's booked out, it's been controlled by the responsible person for the safe. Now, how can it happen that the person can take that firearm to some other place and the responsible person cannot declare to say, well, I want to know where the firearm is?
Honourable Member, Chair,
I think we have a situation, I think it's in the Western Cape in particular, where they have a stabilization unit which doesn't belong to any station, and those members were not issued with 108, and therefore they draw wherever they work as they're deployed in a certain area itself. It's the issue of Mitchell's Plain where these guns were lost. We have Task the Hawks and the National Task Team on Firearms who are busy investigating the matter now. We picked up not only that, but a couple of other matters which we have spoken about in the meeting, and there's an investigation into this issue to control, to go back to the system where there is control at the central level at the station issue itself. So on the issue of a R5, it should only be issued to you under special circumstances. No one can draw a R5 on their own in terms of the present regulations itself. But I think this issue of a team being loosely, I think we are meeting with the province also, because I instructed them last week when I was acting Chairman Weller and intelligence to meet with the Western Cape to sort out the thing. So the meetings will continue this week to bring stability to the stability unit, because we cannot have this a loose arrangement as it is now. So we have Chairman Weller is dealing with myself, and I'm sure that the acting when he comes back tomorrow will also give emphasis to the thing. So it's a very abnormal situation which they created here, but we nipping it in the bud to try to prevent further. Just on the issue of firearms, we're also looking at establishing firearm banks with RFID on each firearm that's in the bank, so if it's moved from there, we'll be able to trace the firearms itself. I think General McQuinn and General Shezi is busy with that. We're starting in the Eastern Cape and Mount Road. They've already gone down the analysis. So there's cells not used, so we can turn into a firearm bank. So even all the recovered firearms, every day is taken to a central point. Tag with the RFID, so whoever moves out there to go with a fingerprint and iris to enter that place, and if he touches the fire, so we're building in more electronics to ensure that we have better safekeeping, and we want to do that all major areas where there are used firearms, ensure that we have fire banks in those areas itself. Of course, the other thing we have to increase the destruction, because the good thing is operationally we're collecting much more firearms than before. But we have tasked, I also last week tasked the head of visible policing to start with destruction. We cannot wait for launches and all those things. The longer we keep firearms, the higher the risk on those issues. So I've given them a task to, before the end of the year, every province must have some destruction of these firearms to get rid of the backlog. But the longer we keep them, the bigger the risk is. So we've given clear instructions last week. All those things must be done to reduce the risk on firearms itself, which is a very serious issue itself.
No, thank you very much, General Cruz. I've covered it well, issues of those firearms. If I may ask General Mohlala to go through all the details of each and every area where we have put together a mitigating plan.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. There was an action plan that was developed with the Deputy Provincial Commissioners, and part of it focused on the review and the implementation of the National Instruction to Guide Property and Exhibit Management, and then two, to also develop and implement the OPEM Standard Operational Procedure to guide OPEM system users, including recent review of the SOP. Thirdly, we have the Standardization of Success Capture and Report, which is the SAPS 594, which was mentioned by the Station Commander of Cape Town Central, to support accurate capturing of data. Also to review and develop an official OPEM system training program and prioritization of OPEM system training. And then also to develop an OPEM monitoring guidelines in respect to liquor and monitoring of OPEM system to identify incorrect capturing and activation of immediate corrective measures. And this will be built in as part of the first and second level inspection, which is the responsibility of the station commanders and the cluster commanders. And then also assigning of the overseeing function to Office of the Provincial Commander, Firearm, Liquor and Secondhand Goods to monitor capturing of confiscated liquor at police station level, hosting of in-service training sessions at identified problematic police stations, and also arranging provincial information sharing sessions to communicate, which is already part of what the Office of the Acting National Commissioner will be addressing. The continuous further enhancement of the OPEM system in respect of the liquor environment to limit incorrect capturing of liquor confiscated, and also the issue of drugs. The instructions issued to appoint OPEM coordinators to ensure effective management and administration of the OPEM system, including daily, weekly integrity checks and inspections to identify anomalies for immediate rectification. Compliance visits and inspections in respect of the stations to check the liquor environment, and also the exhibit management to provide guidance and support, as well as active corrective measures. Placement of all controls, internal controls, on the SAPS intranet for easy reference for all members of the SAPS. And so also to ensure procurement of calibrated weighing scales that will enable the determination of small quantities of drugs. And then we're also, in addition to that, as Division Visible Policing, having quarterly review sessions with the provinces to ensure that we monitor the action plan in terms of the Auditor General's findings. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members.
For that report. General Kruger, I've got a question for you in terms of our discussion of this afternoon. I mean, a previous question I've asked you about the station commanders, the cluster commanders, the country. Actually, I must ask you tomorrow for the acting national commissioner, but looking at the current deployment and effectiveness, what percentage would you say of your station commanders and cluster commanders countrywide do you feel they're up to it?
Chair, I would say about 60%. In terms of, if we look at what our report, and we finalize our report itself, and the report is probably saying one in every three stations in the police are complying with basic compliance. So
That's just on the picture in general. Zulu would say on the 270 is a very good sample for a research project. So I think we got a very good signed up for all the station givers, signed off by every classical one. So the report is a photo, a picture we've taken of them. We've now done another picture. And there's some improvement, but not as significant as we wanted it to do. So the issue is basic. The critical thing is dereliction of duty, which is very hard to swallow. Where someone just is supposed to do what they're paid to do, and we have to get to fixing that thing. And the only way we get to fixing that is to keep the management, including ourselves, as we come here. Account. Because I say if all levels fail, it means we have failed. We're the last level. So when we are failing, it becomes a problem. So we have to go and fix those things. And I think the plan we put in place, I think if we implement it properly, I think it will get the desired result. Just consider the average age of the police at the moment is 26, which is very young for a big organization of this nature. But I think that if we keep people accountable, because for me the critical thing is, and I think in terms of the cluster concept which we implemented at station, cluster, and provinces, because there is daily accounting at that level. Every day, everyone accounts. And we've seen the results of that sort of accounting session itself. Not only the thing, we're getting significant results in terms of crime at the moment. This year is looking very good because we've implemented, Gauteng has implemented, and the results are good. Eastern Cape has fully implemented, the results are good. The thing we have to change is about the perception is about service delivery itself. And that's where the basic things get done. And we think the station cluster, cluster operational command center should be able to be boosted. All these checks and balances can be checked. Because how much firearms do they recover every day? It's not that they get hundreds. A station might get one firearm, not even all of them. So for them to, for the station commission on a daily basis, and that will be built into those, they can check if all the processes have been followed on the station. How much dockets does he get a day? 5 to 12, maybe maximum at the big station. Have they done what they're supposed to do around recording those dockets itself? So we're boiling that into a daily accounting session, and we think that's going to get us better results on compliance. Because on crime, I think we're starting to make inroads in terms of reducing. But on the issue of basic service delivery, which is the model we split from the cluster to the station, where station must focus on service delivery and compliance. The clusters must focus on operations. I think it's going to make the difference when we get it properly implemented. Thanks, Chair.
Right. Is there any questions outstanding? Members, that is then program 1 and 2. But if there's burning questions, because we must also, if the acting national commissioner is available tomorrow, we will also pose some questions to him specifically. So thank you very much, honourable members. We will then reconvene tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock, room 1, Plain Street 120, Parliamentary Complex.
Can I just clarify, the 120 Plain Street building is the one where the ministerial offices are?
Yeah.
Is that the one? Okay, so it's
in
okay, so we walk in and turn left.
That's good.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Meeting is closed.